Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Well, I know the days are getting longer. Generally, it takes a while before I see any kind of hint of light outside my window, and it's already starting to get light already here. So the days are getting longer. Summer's coming. And so winter days are numbered at this point, and which means for Florida, summer's probably going to be here next week. So we'll see what happens with that, but it should be interesting. Yeah. So greetings from Milton, Florida, on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River here near Pensacola in the panhandle of Florida on the upper left northwest corner. So broadcasting from here to the world and having a wonderful time doing it. A lot of just a lot of crazy things happening. First of all, I think my voice is, I hope my voice is getting better, although I still might have to mute for the occasional big cough or something like that. But don't. So if you hear a little bit of silence, this is nothing, you know, don't adjust your set. We should be fine. But then again, unpredictable things happen. I'm still not sure what happened to Friday's show. I mean, we've got the recording, but it hasn't been podcast yet. And so I'm going to contact Blog Talk in a bit and see if we can figure out what's going on there. The other thing is the website's still not up. And so, well, actually, let me, where's first my, I can actually check a phone here. I've got so many screens open on my computer. I try not to overburden the computer too much. But let's just see if the site is back on the phone at this particular time. Let's take that one, take that one, take that one. Let's go to that one. And no, it's not back yet. Okay, so we're going to keep working on that. That's today's project. We have to get that back up because the truckers need bills to present to Washington. And if I don't have my site there, there's no links to them. The beauty of having it be electronic is that you can just go to the link and you can share it everywhere, share it to media, share it to Congress, share it everywhere else. You don't have to print up a bunch of bills, pass them out, and all that kind of stuff. So it's much faster, but that is contingent, of course, upon the website being up and able to do that. And so that's our challenge right now. It's just a question of doing some last minute, I think it's called an SSL connection license, things like that. And once that's up and running, I will immediately contact the truckers. I got friends out there. And so we'll get them say, hey, well, links are up. Bills are ready to go. Let's, so we're kind of racing time right here. So the trucks keep moving. And every hour they get closer to D.C. And I want to make sure that that's ready to go for them because, yes, that's going to be huge for us. I mean, I'll grant you that. And we need it to be huge for us here at Action Radio because, you know, the bigger the show, the more people listen, the more, you know, potential lobbyists we have, the more citizen advocates, citizen legislators, the better we can do our job, which is to bring the greatest freedom to the greatest number as quickly as possible. I mean, that's that job here. That's what I see my job at Action Radio. And so that's what we're going to try and do. So I had a title of a show, the title for the show today originally, as the sorry state of the union. And I got thinking about that. I said, wait a minute. The union's okay. The people are okay. The people are doing, you know, everything they can. The spirit of this country has probably never been more unified. The sorry state is the state itself. That's the problem. And so I changed the title from the sorry state of the union to the sorry state of the union speech. Because the truly sorry people, I kind of put this in a rather dramatic way here. So let me scroll down a little bit here. So I wrote, the real sorry state is not the union, but the deep state. What a sorry bunch of cynical, selfish, emotionally dead, soulless occupiers of space. And you think about that, and I'm thinking about it, but tell me, you know, if you agree that the deep state is the sorry state. They're miserable people. They're only happy when they're controlling everything. They would rather, they're so selfish, they would rather sacrifice our country just so they can keep their perks, their business as usual, their three martini lunches, their political, you know, trips and favors and whatever else down at Epstein Island and wherever else they go and whatever else they do and, you know, and to associate with the people they associate, you know, that club inside the D.C. bubble. And if you've never seen it, I mean, you've all heard about it, right? Because we've all heard reporters talk about it. But if you've never actually seen it, just reaching back here a little bit. But if you've never actually seen it in operation, it's quite a thing to behold. And until you're there actually talking to people, you know, I remember when I had my internship in Washington back in the 80s, you know, back when folks like Senator Ernest Hollings were there, And boy, you want to talk about peacocks? Not just him, but they all got the best hair, the best suits. You know, the senators preened around. There weren't a lot of women senators at that point. In fact, I don't think there were. I'm not sure who, and not a huge amount of women representatives. So mostly it was guys, and they're kind of walking around, you know, being impressive. And you always tell the senators, especially senators, had these beautiful blue suits and sky blue and gray and dark blue and navy, and you know, and they were just, you know, they look like the maitre d', you know, the most best coiffed, best dressed person was always the senators. And so it's really funny to watch them, but that was their thing, the privilege. But in those days, it wasn't quite as bad. They still had some connection to the people, to the states. There was still something that wasn't as isolating as it is now. So you look at Brandon, who lives in a strange, you know, fantasy world. I mean, he absolutely does. You know, he's probably, you know, convinced himself, or he either doesn't know or whatever, that he thinks he's probably doing good things. He thinks he's probably the greatest president that ever lived. Finally, he's in charge. He's going to make everything right. And he has no clue that everything he touches is being destroyed by the handlers that are telling him what to do and say. That's sad, too. But what's really sad is the acceptance of Brandon and a coup by the deep state, including the Geldings. So you look at a Mitch McConnell or a Kevin McCarthy or a Lindsey Graham or even a Ted Cruz or a Rand Paul, not one of which have had a press conference calling for the removal of Brandon based on a coup d'etat. Not one. Oh, sure, they object. You know, they get up there and they talk about how bad and all the stupid things he's done. And Rand Paul will occasionally question Dr. Fascist on the origins of the lab and how he's lying about gain of function. That's tinkering. That's just going around the edges. Why don't you just accuse him of mass murder and genocide? Why don't you accuse him of withholding early treatments? Why don't you accuse him of what he should be, of manipulating the political system through fear and intimidation, you know, to sell a bogus vaccine that's really snake oil, messenger RNA snake oil that's far more dangerous than the actual virus itself, through a series of lockdowns and mandates and masks and closures, you know, of schools, beaches, parks, of a completely destroying of an entire generation of kids. Why don't you accuse him of what he's really doing? And that's sad. He's not. Okay. And I don't, you know, I've long given up trying to force these people to do the right thing. That's why I created Action Radio, so that we can do the right thing for them. Okay. So we're going to write the bills for them. In fact, I got to talk to Pianki about getting his bill, as soon as our website gets back, his bill to separate federal and state ballots into the mix of things going to Washington. And so the sorry state is the fact that these people are still in charge of anything. You know, why, you know, well, let's see what happens with the truckers. But the fact that they're building a fence to keep people who have freedom out, that's kind of a fascinating analogy. I mean, if you made this into a Twilight Zone episode, put it in black and white and showed a bunch of school kids, you know, it's like superimpose Rod Serling, you know, and kind of, you know, or do it like a computer simulation of Rod Serling. You're entering a strange moment of time and space where children wear masks because their identities have been stolen by a virus, you know, something like that. Do like a Rod Serling. And this is what happens in the Twilight Zone. Do, 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 do. You know, you're entering a strange, you know, or however he did it. But I mean, you know, and then just show a normal classroom in L.A. Nobody would believe it. You could pass it off as a Twilight Zone episode from the 60s. And as I said in an earlier piece, you know, the Twilight Zone is meant to shock you, not serve as a manual. Okay, that's, you know, but they talked about freedom, you know, and my two favorites, Rod Serling and Gene Roddenberry, who did Star Trek. You know, if you look at the original Star Trek episodes, they all had a message of freedom, unlike the later ones, which are just kind of cute. Okay, I'm sorry, you know, Star Trek II and Star Trek The Next Generation and Star Trek, you know, whatever manifestation there was after that, they never had the same patriotic message that the first one did. And it just didn't. In fact, the person actually had a Christian message too. It was really interesting. So you look at the early Star Treks from a Christian patriotic perspective, and everything makes sense. Same thing with Rod Serling. Twilight Zone was all about freedom. What was the Twilight Zone? Well, it was the borderline between freedom and tyranny. You know, not just the borderline between light and dark. It's the borderline. You know, I mean, which side of the Twilight Zone are you on? Are you on the side of tyranny or on the side of freedom? I mean, that's pretty much how it was divided up. It was really fascinating the way all this came about. Anyway, so the sorry state. Whoop, I need to move something. Whoop, I'm sorry. There's stuff going on here. It's a complicated day. But the really sorry state are the folks in Washington. The tolerance for a coup d'etat, the tolerance for our government being stolen, the tolerance for the lack of a daily press conference highlighting the election correction. You know, they just found 200,000 some odd ballots in Arizona with mismatched signatures. Where's the national news? Where's the worldwide news for that matter? You know, how come the world press hasn't picked up on this? Is this being censored somehow? You know, what about the press in Switzerland and India and I don't know, where else? Kenya, you know, Thailand, and pick a country. Well, how come they're not reporting this? This is huge news. You know, the United States has never had a coup d'etat. One would think this would be world epic news, and it would be reported every day. I mean, this should be reported. Watergate was reported every day. You know, the news media, even I don't trust our own news media. Our own news media reported a hoax that never existed for over 2 years. All right, but they won't report because they're in on it. They're part of it. So the story for some enterprising reporter somewhere in the world. How about Le Monde? Let's get to France in on this. They'll have a good political scandal in France. Yeah, look at the French Revolution. They love a good scandal over there. You know, in fact, they'll drag out the guillotine and try and, you know, make corrections the old-fashioned way. Well, if we kill enough people and leave the rest, we'll be okay. There's the French Revolution in a nutshell. But what is this tolerance? What is this? Why are Republicans going to the State of the Union speech tonight? You know, do we have a union when we have a coup? There's a question for you. Do we actually have a union? Are we a United States, these United States, when we have a fraudulent federal government? We don't have a federal government right now. We have a coup. We have a bunch of occupiers. The only reason they're still there, I think, is because they're familiar to us. People know Joe Biden. There was a time when Joe Biden was a legal senator. There was a time Joe Biden was a legal vice president. But now he's an illegal occupier of the White House. He has crossed that line. He has crossed the twilight zone. He has gone over from freedom to tyranny. He is his, and the problem is I think he's still in the twilight zone mentally. So think about that too. So part of the coup is to put somebody there who can lie convincingly because he no longer knows what the truth really is. That's his job. His job is to lie convincingly, to read the lines, to be able to say the things that no one else could say with a straight face, with even the slightest shred of conscience or understanding of where they are and what they're doing. You know, if you ask Joe, you know, what's the date? Oh, it's March 1st, 1993. You know, I don't know what would come out of his mouth. You know, what year is this? Huh? What are you talking about? And if nobody answered him, would he know? I mean, that would be a very telling thing. What year is this? 2006. Huh? Yeah, I'm on my way to China to meet with Deng Xiaoping. What? You know, I mean, these are the kind of things, I mean, talk about a cognitive test. We don't need to give him a cognitive test. We just need to let him speak for 5 minutes without a teleprompter. You know, and so that's it. And then you got the party girl. Well, the party girl, the Indian, African-American, Jamaican, Indian, you know, slave-owning family party girl who got her start with Willie Brown, you know, moving up the ranks the old-fashioned way, you know, partying and sleeping her way up. You know, well, let's just say Willie Brown. I can't accuse her of things I don't know beyond that, but it's just fun to speculate. But she's obviously there for the power. You know, Kamala Harris has no substance. You know, listen to her, and she says, why haven't you been to the southern border? She says, well, I haven't been to Europe either. She didn't even see either. She says, well, I haven't been to Europe. What? This is in the surreal. This is like a Salvador Dali surrealist painting. You know, what was that saying? You know, how many surrealists does it take to change a light bulb? The fish. It's an old joke in high school. Anyway, but this is a surreal world. And she's there because she's the only person in the Democrat Party less popular than the current occupant who has no idea where he is. So this is the sorry state. So the sorry state is really them and the fact that they're still there. Now, why haven't the states coalesced? Why haven't the conservative states gotten together and gone before the Supreme Court and said, we are under a coup? Okay, so everybody loves Ron DeSantis and everybody loves Greg Abbott, you know, governor of Texas, and Ron DeSantis, the governor of Florida. And my favorite right now is Kristi Noem, governor of South Dakota. She's the only person that didn't lock down anything. But how come they haven't gotten together in a governor's conference and gone to the Supreme Court and said, we are under a coup? We've got evidence in Arizona Michigan, Wisconsin, Georgia, Pennsylvania, Nevada, you know, Arizona. We've got evidence of massive vote fraud. We've got videos, affidavits. We've got all kinds of testimony. We've got hearings from Jenna Ellis and Rudy Giuliani. We've got hearings at state legislatures in all these states. We've got people willing to testify now. We've got all this evidence. We are under a coup. Now, I know the Supreme Court rejected it the first time, but how come that was the state of Texas did it? What if the states got together? Okay, and then said the Supreme Court, we need to bring this case before you. Okay, we are under a coup. And the Supreme Court says, you know, John Roberts says, well, let me think about that for a minute. I don't want to be too controversial. I don't want to be called a white supremacist. So let's pass on that. We don't think we have jurisdiction. You know, what do you mean you don't have jurisdiction? That's the one place you do have jurisdiction is disputes between the states. Okay, that's one of the few places the Supreme Court actually does have jurisdiction, right? So then what the states should do is to set up their own tribunal. Oh, wouldn't this be interesting? Bring the Brandon coup before a collection of states in a tribunal. The states hold a trial. The states, which are supreme to the federal government, which operates under the Constitution created by the states, okay? Now, I don't think there's a provision in the Constitution, because I don't think anybody foresaw this, that the federal government would be that complicit and the states would be as complicit as they are in allowing a coup to take place. So I don't think there's a provision in the Constitution that allows for a state tribunal, but now's the time to have one. I'll talk to Jonathan Mosley about this. You know, now is the time to have a multi-state tribunal putting the coup on trial. If the House can have a bogus January 6th inquisition for the suppression of Trump from running in 2024, because that's what it's about, okay? And that's completely bogus. Why can't we have a tribunal of the states, you know, including especially the six, you know, but not even if those six states don't want to do it, but I'm sure you could get the state legislatures of Arizona, but the legislatures and the governors of enough states to put together a coalition tribunal saying, we're going to put this guy on trial. We're going to put this coup on trial, and we're going to bring in witnesses, and we're going to make it public, and we're going to do the whole thing. That's what really should happen. Shit. You want to change everything for the November midterms? That's how you do it. Okay. And even if they wait till after the midterms, then, I think it should start it now. I just thought of it now. Well, we'll start posing it. So if you think that's a good idea, start contacting your governors and say, hey, let's have a national tribunal. Let's have the states conduct their own tribunal as to the coup, excuse me, and what happened there. All right. We're going to take, I still got a bit of a fish. So we're going to play a couple of commercials that this hour here. We've got our regular folks came in. Shelby Frenette's going to be joining us in the second hour with Cruise and Travel, and we're going to have Josie Cossie with the Latino Report. It's really going to be the Ukraine Report today, and so that's going to be quite different. So that should be very interesting. And the third hour, I've got Angie Hansen, who's a new friend, and is going to talk to us about we're going to do another bit of family court. She's got some different things, some legislation, some court stuff going on there, and she's just all around interesting person who I hope will be a regular contributor to the show. And so I'm meeting all these wonderful crusaders out there. It's kind of cool. So we'll talk about that. I'll play you a couple things first. And then at the bottom in the hour, a little bit after another break, I'll go over some more stuff here. And then maybe an article, excuse me, or so. And then what I want to do is play you. This might not be a bad time to play it right now. Santa Rosa Volunteers commissioned me to make these wonderful pieces on the Federalist Papers, on the Constitution, on the Articles of the Confederation, Mayflower Compact, you know, various other things I've taken on, like the sedition, what is it, the something in Sedition Act, I forgot what it is, but sedition and I should have it written down here too. Well, I just did the Sedition Act. I didn't really worry about the rest of it. Anyway, so all these things are here, and I find them fascinating. This one's longer because I found Anti-Federalist 9 so fascinating. It's the best written of any of the Federalist Papers, bar none. It is sarcastic, you know. It is just amazingly articulate, speaking in the pompous voice of the. Just imagine. All right, let me put it this way. This might be an interesting way to listen to this. Think of what and the person who wrote it. Their pen name is Montezuma, which I find quite fascinating. So Montezuma wrote this, but you can imagine. I mean, this person is so prescient as to what's happening now. You can just imagine if you just replace, you know, the aristocracy that he's talking about, you know, the Federalists, and replace that with the deep state that's happening today, nothing's changed. It's almost like he foresaw the Constitution as bringing this about, which has caused me to question the Constitution in ways I never did before. I thought it was pretty good. You know, and now I realize that people are criticizing and go, you know, damn it, they're right. That the anti-federalists were right. Anyway, let me play this. We'll be back in a little bit. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments. Insights into our founding documents. Sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. I'm really starting to love the anti-federalists. Number 9 was written under the pen name Montezuma. This is the most sarcastic, bitingly satirical, and insightful of all the papers I have investigated thus far. Montezuma correctly identifies and mocks the ruling class that would become the Congress under the Constitution. He later outlines all the problems with giving the federal government so much power compared to the Articles of Confederation, where every prediction of later abuse of power came true. I hate it when people are right and no one listens at the time. The best way to appreciate Montezuma is in his own words. He begins, "We, the aristocratic party of the United States, lamenting the many inconveniences to which the late Confederation subjected the well-born, the better kind of people, bringing them down to the level of the rabble, and holding an utter detestation that frontispiece to every bill of rights, that all men are born equal, beg leave, for the purpose of drawing a line between such as we think were ordained to govern, and such as were made to bear the weight of government, without having any share in its administration, to subject to our friends in the first class for their inspection the following defense of our monarchical, aristocratical democracy." I think, since these papers originally appeared in newspapers, that the authors were paid by the word, because they all have a couple of paragraphs of mere nonsense in order to get to the good stuff near the end of the paper. So let's go there. Montezuma characterizes our future government under the Constitution thus. "We have frequently endeavored to effect in our respective states the happy discrimination which pervades this system, but finding we could not bring the states into it individually, we have determined and have taken pains to leave the legislature of each free and independent state, as they now call themselves, in such a situation that they will eventually be absorbed by our grand continental vortex, or dwindle into petty corporations and have power over little else than yoking hogs or determining the width of cartwheels." Montezuma is making the case that the states will be under the national, not federal, government. And guess what? They are. Montezuma goes on, speaking as he would if the Federalists were honest about what they were really doing with the Constitution. He writes, "We have so interwoven continental and state legislatures that they cannot exist separately, whereas we in truth only leave them the power of electing us. For what can a provincial legislature do when we possess the exclusive regulation of external and internal commerce, excise, duties, imposts, post offices, and roads, when we and we alone have the power to wage war, make peace, coin money if we can get bullion, if not, borrow money, organize the militia, and call them forth to execute our decrees, and crush insurrections assisted by a noble body of veterans subject to our nod, which we have the power of raising and keeping even in the time of peace. What have we to fear from state legislatures or even from states when we are armed with such powers, with a president at our head? Regarding the new powers of the president if the Constitution is ratified, he, in the same tone of voice, writes this: What have we to fear armed with such powers, with the president at our head,
who is Captain General of the Army, Navy, and Militia of the United States, who can make and unmake treaties, appoint and commission ambassadors and other ministers, who can grant or refuse reprieves or pardons, who can make judges of the Supreme and other continental courts, in short, who will be the source, the fountain of honor, profit, and power, whose influence, like the rays of the sun, will diffuse itself far and wide, will exhale all democratical vapors, and break the clouds of popular insurrection. One of the most fascinating revelations from Montezuma is his prescient perception of future censorship of the press and the now total control of information, search engines, and social media by big tech and big media, doing all the work of censorship for the government, which has that inconvenient First Amendment in the way. Oh, it wouldn't be in the way for another 10 years after the Constitution was ratified because the Federalists didn't want a Bill of Rights. Montezuma says, "We have for some time considered the freedom of the press as a great evil. It spreads information and begets a licentiousness in the people, which needs the rein more than the spur. Besides, a daring printer may expose the plans of government and lessen the consequence of our President and Senate. For these and many other reasons, we have said nothing with respect to the right of the people to speak and publish their sentiments, or about their palladiums of liberty and such stuff. We do not much like that sturdy privilege of the people, the right to demand the writ of habeas corpus. We have therefore reserved the power of refusing it in cases of rebellion, and you know, we are the judges of what is rebellion." For those who don't get the reference, the rein makes the horse stop, and the spur makes it go. In one of the best summations tied to one of the best introductions I've ever read in any of these papers, Montezuma exemplifies the us versus them argument against the Constitution, where we the people are clearly us. Montezuma concludes with this: "Impressed with the conviction that this Constitution is calculated to restrain the influence and power of the lower class, to draw that discrimination we have so long sought after, to secure to our friends privileges and offices which were not to be obtained under the former government, because they were in common to take the burden of legislation and attendance on public business off the commonalty, who will be much better able thereby to prosecute with effect their private business, to destroy that political 13-headed monster, the state sovereignties, to check the licentiousness of the people by making it dangerous to speak or publish daring or tumultuary sentiments, to enforce obedience to laws by a strong executive aided by military pensioners, and finally to promote the public and private interests of the better kind of people, we submit it to your judgment to take such measures for its adoption as you and your wisdom may think fit." This Anti-Federalist number 9 is so good, I would absolutely recommend reading the entire piece. I know this episode of Founding Moments has taken many moments, but if I didn't think it was worth it, I wouldn't have done it. The source for the Federalist Papers is federalistpapers.org. The Anti-Federalist Papers are from selfeducatedamerican.com. The Articles of Confederation are from usconstitution.net. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website is srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it.
Dangerously cool. Oh, wow. There might be a little bit different volume levels there. I'll have to check that out. That's another thing I'm asking Blog Talk for is volume levels, so I can kind of equalize all these things. Otherwise, I'm just guessing, and I don't find out until after the podcast. So anyway, that's where we stand there. So I think I've said pretty much everything I want to say on the deep state. I mean, I had more notes here, but basically, it's like I feel about Democrats and the deep states. You know, Democrat won, gelding compliant. Or Democrat run, excuse me, gelding compliant. That's pretty much how it works. So the geldings do whatever they're told by the Democrats, and that includes appearing to look like opposition when they're really, you know, just part of the plan. And so the deep state, you know, our job is to make the deep state miserable. And we make them miserable by giving them as little control as possible, by firing them, getting rid of them, purging them from government, you know, unelecting them, moving them out, you know, somewhere else, go somewhere else, do something, you know, do whatever you want, but don't do it in Washington. Don't do it in our government. Don't do it in any government. Don't even do it, you know, local dog catcher. Don't just stay out of government. Stay out of trying to, you know, control other people and animals and things. Just don't. Just go away. And so that's our job. And we're happy. You know, the more freedom, the happier we are. Now, freedom does imply law, you know, does imply a certain discipline. I mean, the Greeks learned this too. Absolute freedom is anarchy, and that's not freedom at all, because all your time is spent, you know, guarding your stuff from everybody else, because there's no law, you know, there's no protections. You can't have rights without certain laws, because rights are dependent on a certain amount of order to society also. But as I was talking to Jen Clark about this in Australia, you got to find that balance point. You got to find the point of minimum law and government where any move sends you down towards anarchy, and where you actually have a loss of rights and a loss of the ability to accumulate property and a loss of just basic, you know, the basic freedoms, because you're spending all your time guarding your stuff and your family and your property, and, you know, and that's not freedom. You know, that's constant torment. Or the other way, which is that, you know, whereas if you have more government, as soon as you start heading towards the totalitarian side, that long slippery slope down towards absolute tyranny, where government gets bigger and bigger and bigger and your rights get fewer and fewer and fewer, and they take more and more of your property and, you know, and control more and more of your life. So there, and I don't know what that point is, but that's the goal. So the goal for we the people is to put the government on that absolute balance point where any move to the right heads you towards anarchy and any move to the left heads you towards tyranny. That's what I call freedom. I mean, it's my, I created this, you know, in my head, right on the show, actually. That, to me, that's the pyramid of freedom. And it's pretty easy to imagine. Imagine a, you know, a 12-inch ruler, a 1-foot ruler, for those of you that still remember those things. If you don't, if you're young, just look it up. Okay, we used to use rulers in school. It's kind of fun. You can tell what a foot was, all right? So on the left side of a foot is zero. Of course, that would be absolute tyranny, where you have control over nothing. Okay? And then the right side would be absolute anarchy, which would be 12, which is maximum, you know, which is complete anarchy. Well, you have control over everything, but so does everybody else. There's no division. There's no rights. There's no, you know, there's no way to, you know, exercise grievances. There's nowhere to go when things go wrong. Okay, that's anarchy. All right. And so you back up a couple of inches, you know, 2 or 3 inches, you know, around the 9 or 10 inch mark, you know, and you kind of raise, you know, to a pyramid, a couple, 2 or 3 inches high. And let's call that point freedom. Okay. So freedom or liberty, let's call it liberty. So this is the liberty pyramid. Let's put it about the 9-inch mark, okay? So because the liberty is a lot closer to anarchy than it is to tyranny, but it is not anarchy, okay? So liberty is the point where you have the minimum law necessary, minimum law. Let me say that one more time. The minimum law necessary to get the maximum freedom. So you're at the furthest point from tyranny and the furthest point from anarchy that you can get together. You know, you get the furthest point away from both of them. That's the point of liberty. And that's what we strive for. And that's what we're going for here at Action Radio, is to write laws that bring us to, and nobody knows exactly where it is. It's going to go back and forth, you know, we want to be at that pyramid. We want to be at that apex of liberty where more laws, you know, go towards tyranny and fewer laws go towards anarchy. That's it. Or better laws are, you know, more general. And it's just a different way to analyze it. But so think of the liberty pyramid. If anybody's, what's liberty? Okay, well, I think I've been trying to define it for years. I just came up with this by accident. But that's how I define it. It's a pyramid. The liberty is the point. And if I can, you know, write this down, save it for future. Liberty is the point where an increase in laws, you know, moves you towards tyranny, and a decrease in laws moves you towards anarchy. It's that mythical point in the balance point. Okay. Let's get some articles here. Let's see what everybody else has to say. I've had enough of what I want to say. There are people that are doing the same thing about sorry State of the Union. So let's go to AMAC, which is the Association of Mature American Citizens. You know, they're the conservative version of ARP, the American Association of Retired Persons. Okay. I don't know. Retirement sounds boring. I don't, you know, I can't afford it anyway, but, you know, quite frankly, I think I'd be bored to death. I think a lot of people are bored to death in retirement. That's one of the problems. All right. So we got to chat a little bit here. We've got some, anybody wants to call in too while I'm doing this, you know, feel free. And so 215-383-3832. I've got live chat working. So that's working also. Don't advertise, you know, don't promote your group or things like that. The purpose of live chat is to talk to me because you can't call in. That's what live chat's for. If you want to do other stuff, you know, post it on Facebook or call the show and, you know, we'll talk then. All right. So this is ARP. This is AMAC, excuse me. This is, someone has to sponsor us. I'll have to look into that. Anyway, so Alan Jameson, AMAC exclusive. This is from January 6, 2022. So this is last month, but still pretty good. It says Joe Biden has reason to fear his first State of the Union address. This is back when, you know, State of the Union is actually given in January. Not this time. Now we're, what, March 1st? So he's a little bit late, but that's okay. He probably had to nap first. So Alan says, let's move some stuff around here so I can see the phone numbers. Here we go. One of the first big political events of the new year is typically the president's annual State of the Union address, which is rightly considered the Super Bowl of presidential events. This most widely anticipated speech of the political year usually takes place in January, except for extraordinary circumstances like a government shutdown. I kind of welcome a government shutdown. At least they'll stop them spending money. Anyway, it says, in fact, no commander-in-chief of the modern era has ever given a State of the Union address later than February 12th. Sorry, Brandon. You're a bit late, as we would expect you would be. All right. I'm having to scroll this down. My regular mouse is out. I'm on the backup mouse, and so it's not scrolling, so I got to move it. It's a long story. I'm not going to explain it. All right. Back to the article. It says, this year, however, Americans have to wait weeks or even months longer than usual to hear, you know, they say President Biden. I'll use that just for convenience. I went over that in the first part of the show. All right. I'm going to kind of rearrange this a little bit here. Let's move this over a little bit here. Let's over a little bit here. Oh, that's much better. Okay. I'm sorry. Sorry for the interruption. All right. So it says, no commander-in-chief of the modern era has ever given a State of the Union address later than February 12th. This year, however, Americans may have to wait weeks or even months longer than usual to hear, you know, what's his name, deliver his first formal State of the Union. According to reports, the White House is considering March 1st, well, say they already knew it back then, as a potential date for the speech, leading many political observers to ask an obvious question, why the delay? Well, I'm wondering if they decided that they knew that the truckers were going to be here then. That's my first thought. Did they know the truckers were going to be in D.C. at that particular point? It just seems to me a remarkable coincidence that the fences are going up to guard the State of the Union speech, but that's not really what's going on. The fences are going up to prevent Americans from exercising their freedom, from peaceably assembling at the White House. That's what's going on. And so let me see what's going on here. It looks like I got a call here. Let's check some out real quick. Oh, Rick from New Jersey. There we go. Let's just bring Rick back on and see what he has to say. Hey, Rick. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, what's going on, dude? How are you?
Well, it's a little under the weather. My voice is a little scraggly, but other than that, I think I'm still functioning, so that's good. But, State of the Union, and like I say, I changed my mind. I think it's really the state of the deep state that's the really sad part. The union is doing fine. Where the people are, you know, leave us alone. We'd be in great shape. Yeah, what do you think?
Well, we forgot about the truckers because now we have a fake war going on.
Well, now, let's talk about that for a second, because I'm hearing a lot of stuff about Ukraine. Now, I've got a friend of mine who's a Navy officer, Doug Underhill. He's coming on tomorrow. And so we're going to talk about this, the military aspect. I want to get inside Putin's head and kind of find out what he's thinking, if we can kind of project there. Because you listen to what's going on in D.C., and they're all set to go to war with Russia. I mean, what kind of an idiot? It's insane. With what? From what? To what?
Well, for what purpose?
They're
already pushing a false narrative.
Well, tell me about that.
By the way, what
do you see as the false narrative?
Well, the pictures of Zelensky that CNN's putting up and acting like he's a superhero, those pictures are from 2014 to 2016.
I'm not surprised.
Okay. Every single one of those pictures is fake. He's not doing this. He's not fighting.
Where is he?
They're putting up pictures of Vladimir Klitschko, and those pictures are from 2010.
Who's Vladimir Klitschko?
Heavyweight boxer, pretty much dominated the WBC for like 10 years.
Oh, and he's in uniform too? Now,
he's the mayor of Kiev.
Okay. Yeah, at least you pronounce it properly.
But he's
Thank
not
you.
There right now.
Oh, where is he?
Oh, we have no idea. I'm going to say probably Vegas.
He's got the money, right?
Yeah, so but they're like showing pictures. They're showing old pictures of him. Lomachenko, who is probably the best boxer pound for pound in the world right now.
Right.
They're showing pictures of him, in military gear, but
right.
he was 10 years younger.
Now, do they have compulsory military service in Ukraine?
I have no idea.
Okay. Well, the reason I ask is because it would make sense to have all these pictures of people in military garb if everybody had to serve, especially the men. If men have a compulsory 2-year service, like Israel has compulsory military, but they have for everybody, right? So Israel
yeah,
has 2 years of compulsive military service.
Like Israel did?
Yeah.
I think a lot of these are training videos they shot with people.
Okay.
Yeah, because they're clearly not there. I mean, the mayor of Kiev, the president of Ukraine himself is
right.
putting out pictures of himself, and the pictures are 8 years old.
Well, I mean, there's a propaganda war going on. We know that. So the question is, what's real and what's false, and who's doing what to whom? So I fully expect both the Russians and the Ukrainians to put out propaganda that suits their purposes. That makes sense to me. Let's see if we can get through them, though.
I'm personally okay with Russia doing whatever the hell they want with the Ukraine.
Why?
Well, because it's not our war.
Well, I agree with you there. This is an important distinction. You can be not okay with what's going on there and still say it's not our purpose to invade. I felt Iraq was the same way. I mean, Saddam Hussein, for example, in Iraq was a bastard. I mean, he was an evil, cruel, sadistic SOB. Okay. Now, was it our place to go to war?
War criminals of all time.
Exactly.
Third to Hitler and Stalin.
Well, there's a bunch of folks. Look at the Iranians. You know, you look at massacres of Houthis and over Tutsis over Hutus, or which I know one killed the other in just ridiculous numbers with machetes. There are cruel and barbaric.
That's why we always said that.
Say that again.
The Ayatollah is an asshole. We always said that.
Okay, so the Ayatollah. Look at Idi Amin. Look at Pol Pot. You know, they're horrible things that have happened.
Pol Pot was probably one of the worst of all time.
Okay, exactly. So in other words, there are terrible people in the world, but the question is, what is the role of the U.S. military? The role of the U.S. military is to defend the United States.
I don't think we have any role here because the Ukraine denied, they refused to be part of the U.N. They refused to be part of NATO.
Yep.
Until they were threatened, then they tried to join. Well,
yeah.
I'm sorry, but you don't get to knock on my door and tell me you need help when it's too late.
Yeah, that's like saying I don't want fire insurance on my house until it's burning. Oh, can I buy insurance now? That's what the health insurance company used to say. You can't be diagnosed with cancer and then buy health insurance. You know, it's a pre-existing condition.
Exactly. Now it would be different if the president wasn't a totalitarian piece of garbage.
Well,
I mean, Zelensky
Ukraine's not a democracy.
Literally murdered and jailed everybody that opposed it.
This is Zelenko?
Zelensky.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, I'll get my name confused.
Everybody that opposed him, the party that was close to beating him, well, the second best party, he jailed and murdered everybody.
Yeah. I mean, Ukraine is not, you know, they're not a republic. They're not a democracy.
No,
I don't have any faith in democracies. So this is ridiculous thing in the United States that we support democracies and we try and build democracies. And people are like, what, Afghanistan? Are you irrational? No, you're not going to build a democracy in Afghanistan. You're not going to have a Western-style democracy in Afghanistan. And I don't like Western-style democracies anyway. I like, classic-style republics.
I don't think we can run a soda machine in Afghanistan.
Yeah, exactly. So in other words, that was a waste. So let's get back to Saddam Hussein. Agreeably one of the worst bastards that ever lived, okay? One of the cruelest, most inhuman monsters on the planet, okay? Now, was it our job to go into Iraq and invade with our armed forces? No, because it wasn't a vital U.S. defensive interest. Iraq was not going to attack us.
Well,
all right?
Are we going by Desert Storm or Iraqi Freedom?
Well, the other thing, too, how about the Kuwait? Well, let's talk about Kuwait. Okay, so Iraq was slant drilling into Kuwait's oil reserve. In other words, so they're angling their drills to drill into Kuwaiti oil. So they're stealing Kuwaiti oil.
Whose problem is that? I drink your milkshake.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's Kuwait's problem. It's not our problem. Is it wrong? Sure. Go to the World Trade Organization.
Yeah. It's what they did. It's what the men did in Wyoming. I drink your milkshake.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I got a question for you on Wyoming and federal land in a minute. This is something I want to talk about probably Thursday with Jonathan. But let's get back to the issue of Kuwait. While we were defending Kuwaiti oil, the Kuwaitis were in Monaco, you know, partying.
Oh,
yeah, thanks, dude. Appreciate the help.
There was not a diplomat to be defended.
Yeah. Kuwait was empty, you know.
The people were there. They abandoned their own people.
Hmm.
Isn't that something?
Yeah.
So we came in like rock stars, Desert Storm superheroes.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Won the war in 14 hours.
Hmm.
Look how cool we are, and look how tough we are. 14 hours, we won the war under H. Couldn't
mm-hmm.
win it in 13 years under Bush and Obama.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that interesting?
Well, I mean, wars. You know, you got to understand, wars are not meant to be won, according to a deep state. Wars are meant to be waged.
Well,
because it's different. There's a difference between waging a war and winning a war. Okay,
you can't win money. The only way you win money on the win is if you sell American flags. Other than that, you just got to keep the war going.
Well, see, the object of war is to spend money. That's why it's like the F-35. The object of the F-35 is to spend money because the damn thing doesn't work. Can't fight, can't fly. You know, it's too expensive. But there's too many companies involved in it, and too many congressional districts involved in it. So that's why we still have it.
It is kind of funny that we haven't won a war since World War II.
Mm-hmm. Well, we haven't had a war since World War II. That was our last declared war.
Korea was a war.
That was a United Nations police action, my dear fellow.
I like the way you're talking, pal.
Yeah, that was a United. That's what Truman said.
United Nations action.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you seen the blue helmets that Germany's giving? Do they look familiar?
Ooh. I saw them. They wait until they start handing out swastika bands.
No, they can do that. No, but I got a great article. I'm saving it for tomorrow.
Well, they don't like Zelensky because Zelensky is Jewish fella.
Hey, if he was from Brooklyn, he'd be talking about like this. Well, you're coming to my country, you bring a bunch of Russians in here. Wow, come on. Get out of here. Get away from my house.
I'm trying to have a house over here.
For all the Jewish people I've
just Now it's a Mel Brooks movie?
I love Mel Brooks. Yeah, where's Jackie Mason and Mel Brooks when you need them?
Oh, Mel Brooks is the best. Well, yeah, it was kind of more Jackie Mason.
Yeah, so what would the Blazing Saddles version?
Putin is the man who farts in the bathtub and bites the bubbles.
What would the Blazing Saddles version of this be for Russia? You know, we'll call it Blazing Borscht. we really need Mel Brooks. This is a time when we need some serious
Blazing
comedy.
Mammoth.
Yeah. But it's fascinating.
You know where woolly mammoths come from, Russia?
Woolly mammoths, they're Russian?
Well, woolly mammoths, most of them, they're pretty much all found in Siberia.
Oh, okay. That's good to know. I wonder if they're still there.
Blazing mammoths.
Blazing mammoths.
Everybody says that mammoths are gone. Nobody's even been in Siberia. There's like three guys in a prison.
This is a gulag. Welcome to Camp Gulag.
No,
yes, called, you're in Germany
it's
today.
It's actually called the Black Dolphin.
That's a camp there?
No, that's the world's that's most dangerous prison, the Black Dolphin.
I've never heard of the Black Dolphin. What a nice name for a horrible place. Jeez.
Yeah, it's actually
that's Flipper, man. You can't cast aspersions on Flipper. Ugh.
Yeah, but
anyway.
That's what it's called. But you're not allowed to actually look at anything except for the floor for the rest of your life.
Is that how bad it is? Jeez.
Well, what they do is, I mean, you sit in your cage.
Don't get into too much detail. I don't have time for it. But I mean, not that it's not a problem.
Well, no, you got to watch it. But when they do take you out to move you, they cuff your hands behind your back, and you have to you have to walk staring at the floor.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
they don't want
that.
You to know where you are because you're so dangerous.
Yeah, well, what's the the most dangerous thing to any state is freedom and ideology. You know, the movie V for Vendetta, one of my favorite films. You know, ideas. You can kill the people, but you can't kill the ideas. You can oppress the people. You can starve the people. You can deny the people housing and energy. You can take away jobs. You can take away bank accounts. You can take away everything, but you can't stop their ideas. You can't. I mean, Trudeau could not stop freedom. You know, yeah, he's taken away the trucks. He moved it. But do you think the freedom, the new spirit of freedom in Canada, has died? Hell no, it's gotten even stronger. It's just a little diversified right now. This is why I see Action Radio as a way to kind of unify. This is why I'm so upset my website isn't back right yet, because we've got bills that the truckers, you know, hopefully will be presenting in Washington, you know, in a few days here. But this is the answer to me, is that our government has failed us. Yeah, I know they're on the way. But the reason that Action Radio is here is because our government has failed to represent the people. They've become their own self-representation. They've become their own unit. The government has become separate from the people. Oh, yeah, they come to the people for money, and they do different things like that, and they sort of, you know, parade around election time. But they really, the deep state is a separate entity. It is separate from the Constitution. It is separate from the Congress and from the executive and from the courts. It's a complete. It's all within them, though. But it's a separate entity unto itself, and they're maintaining a coup, and we're like, you know, WTF. Yeah, go ahead.
Don't you fear the disappearance of us? That's already happened from the original January 6th. And then when you see money disappearing and people shutting people down, don't you fear that?
If I feared anything at all, I wouldn't be doing this. You know, my name's out there. I broadcast every day, every weekday. You know, I'm going to be writing articles again. No, I've already made that decision. I'm not going to live in fear.
Yeah,
you know, and if something happens to me,
guys like you and me are, you know, talking to people, well, especially you, talking to people and letting them know there is nothing to fear.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, first of all,
we are not going to go away.
Yeah, and I'm in my 60s, you know. I mean, I've done some pretty amazing things.
You're
you know,
in your 60s?
Yeah. I know. I don't sound it. Well, maybe I sound it today. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I'm going to be honest. I would have given you 39 times.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. No, but so I got a little bit of life experience to draw on here. And so, you know, if something does happen, you know, if it's like, hey, okay, I've accomplished a lot just creating Action Radio. You know, there's a bunch of other things. Yeah, I wrote a book on flight instruction, you know, raised a kid, you know, did a bunch of other stuff, but traveled extensively, you know, had all kinds of wild adventures, you know, flew an airplane, taught flying for a while, you know.
I've traveled too. Yeah. I've been to Tampa.
Been to where? Tampa?
Yep.
Okay. From where? Well, you're up in New Jersey still. We got to get you back into America.
Yeah, I made it all the way to Tampa.
Okay. Well, you got to travel more. Well, actually, in Action Radio, we're all going to hop down to Belize 1 week, and we're going to go. I'm going to broadcast from there once they lift all the travel restrictions and some other things.
I've been to Idaho, but the good part.
Yeah, we gotta get you traveling a bit more. There's a whole big world out there.
I go to Idaho and Montana every year, and South Dakota. Oh.
Well, that's good. Yeah, they're beautiful.
Yeah, but
places.
I don't go all the way up. I don't go all the way up Idaho. I don't go to where the Nazis live.
Well, when you say Nazis, let's talk about that for a second. Because are you talking about actual leftist skinheads, totalitarians? That emulate the Nazi party, the Aryans? Are you talking about actual leftist Nazis? Are you talking about freedom-loving, patriotic Americans that people call Nazis to make them, you know, appear bad and to demonize them? So what exactly are you, you know, and I'm just curious, you know.
I'm talking about the victims of Ruby Ridge.
Okay, so those weren't Nazis, obviously. The Nazis were the ones that killed them. Lon Horiuchi. Lon Horiuchi, the elite hostage rescue team assassin that killed Randy Weaver's wife, he's the Nazi. Okay, he's the Nazi.
I agree with you wholeheartedly.
Yeah, yeah, and the FBI.
You know,
if you guys want to call in,
it's hard for me to find somebody who knows what I'm talking about. So I'm kind of shocked that
I told you I wasn't born yesterday.
Well,
you
say it better than I. Well, clearly, because you're not 39 like I thought.
Well, that's I guess that's good. So, you know, I plan to be around for a while. So yeah. But Yeah, no, so believe me, you know, and Bill Clinton is still at large after the mass murder at the Waco. You know, I absolutely believe that. So there's a lot of things. So to free Ukraine, you know, when we still have a mass murderer running around, you know, who was, yes, he was a duly elected president, but he abused that power so badly, you know, he should be stripped of everything and thrown in jail. You know, he still has yet to serve a sentence. I'm just sorry we didn't get to try Jan Arino.
What, done to his people?
Well, let's make a distinction between evil leaders in foreign countries doing really bad things to their people and what we should do collectively, globally, as opposed to what we, the United States, should do militarily. So what I see happening in the world right now, and like I said, we're going to talk to Doug Underhill more about this tomorrow. In fact, we can talk about it. Shelby's on the line. I'm going to bring her on in a couple of minutes and see if she wants to address it. Well, we're going to talk about Ukraine, I'm sure, anyway. But the thing is, if you make the distinction, okay, so let's look at this coldly, and what's in the best interest of the United States. What's in the best interest of the United States is not to send our military in so that Russia has an excuse to use either tactical or you know, strategic nuclear weapons. We don't want that. They don't want that either, by the way. Okay, because ultimately what Putin wants is for Ukraine to be part of the Russian Federation. If Putin destroys and nukes, you know, Ukraine, there's nothing there to become part of the Russian Federation. Don't forget that Ukraine is the breadbasket. Ukraine and Georgia feeds a good part of Russia. So what they really want,
that's why they
is
want
to bring
Crimea.
Exactly. Now, Crimea is an interesting place for a strategic port on the Black Sea. Okay,
which is a Russian state.
Exactly. Yeah. So this is like warm water ports. This is all strategic. This is very strategic with the strategic planning. Now, I've got an article too. Let me finish the thought here because we only got a few minutes. I want to get to Shelby. But this is if you look at the overall picture of what Putin's trying to do. If you look at it in terms of he wants Ukraine ultimately to be under Russian domination. The Ukrainians don't want to be under Russian domination. They want to be independent Ukrainians. Putin still wants the food. He still wants the minerals because Russia by itself, the greatest mineral resource, you know, is out in Siberia, which you say is under, you know, 50 feet of ice and has woolly mammoths running around still probably. Okay, so we don't know what's out there. It's too harsh. It's too brutal for anybody to actually get to and do anything with. That's why Russia's big, but only, you know, most people live in the eastern, you know, what, quarter or the western quarter of it. Anyway, so the point is, what should we do? And what I think we should do is what the rest of the world is doing. Block all commercial aviation and private aviation that's Russian origin, which means all the business folks, you know, in their business jets, as well as all Aeroflot and all air, you know, any Russian military, any Russian anything should be banned from European and actually world and Asian airspace as much as possible. And also Canada's done that too. So there's a ban on Russian flights of any kind throughout Europe, both Eastern and Western, and throughout Canada. But the United States, because Brandon works for Putin, basically, we're still open. Okay. In fact, Brandon I just read this before the show, so I didn't have time to really review it, stopped a gas pipeline between Israel and Europe. Once again, funneling more energy dollars to Putin. So Brandon's doing everything possible to help Putin. So that's why we're not going to get into nuclear war. They've already talked about this. I mean, Putin gave Brandon 3 hours worth of instructions a couple of weeks ago. Remember?
Oh, absolutely.
You know, so here's what you know what's going on. Now, you know the cooperation from Hillary giving Russia 20% of our uranium, okay? So that bond is still there.
We're 20 minutes away from speaking Russian until it teaches Chinese.
Well, no, I don't think so yet. But I want to ask, so the basic question is, the world is doing the right thing. Get them out of the SWIFT financial transactions, making it impossible for them to conduct business. See, war in the old days used to be guns. That was it. You know, guns with soldiers, guns with ships, guns with airplanes. That was it. That's all you really had. That was your foreign policy. You know, if what you couldn't enforce, you did with guns. Okay? Blockades, you know, sieges, you know, conquests. That's old-fashioned warfare. Modern warfare is satellites, is cyber war, is financial transactions, is currency. All right, go ahead. What were you saying?
We have 3,000 soldiers right now in Chechnya that are going into the Ukraine.
Well, that's stupid.
Well, exactly. That's what we're going to lose American soldiers. And I got to be honest with you, I don't care about a barrel of oil. I care about an American soldier.
Oh, I do. But the thing is, we've got the oil here. So the number one thing that we should do is immediately Congress, if they had any sense at all, And the Geldings don't, because they're under the control of the Democrats. We have a Senate majority of Republican right now. The Republicans have a Senate majority. They could do anything they wanted.
Yes.
They couldn't control the House, but they could certainly control the Senate. We should have already opened up all our oil. Well, let me bring in Shelby if she wants to talk about this. Otherwise, we're going to put this on hold. I'm going to save for tomorrow. You might want to call back tomorrow. You might want to call back tomorrow or Thursday when I talk about why the federal land in the western states with oil under it isn't really federal land. We'll talk about that in a bit. Shelby, do you want to get in this discussion at all, or you want to talk travel, in which case I'll play your theme. Good morning.
Good morning, everyone. No, I'd love to listen in more. If you don't, you're on a roll, I'm fine with that. It's it's very important, newsworthy, and breaking time, so go for it.
Okay. Well, I won't take too much longer, but we'll get a few opinions. All right, let me talk about this.
Well,
go ahead, Rick.
We should pull our people out, because the only thing we're doing now right now is risking American lives.
Okay, you're just a little unclear on your phone line, but that's okay. Try it one more time. I just want to make sure I get it.
I'm sorry. We're risking American lives. We need to take our men out of there.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so sorry for Zelensky and for all the murderous, totalitarianist things that he's done. He's got to sit by himself. He's not allowed to. First of all, when he puts things out on Twitter and Instagram and puts pictures of him up in military garb, when we know the pictures are from 2014, you're trying to fire up people to defend you. You're lying.
Well, how popular is he? How popular is he with Ukrainians?
Oh, well, he's huge now on Instagram. Everybody in America follows him so much. They love him. But he's
I'm talking about Ukraine.
He puts up fake pictures.
How popular is he in Ukraine?
I'd say the Western 80%, he's a big star.
Okay, in Ukraine. Oh, the Western 80% of Ukraine. Okay, that's what I'm getting at. Okay.
Yeah. Well, most of the eastern part of they're all Russian. They want to be part of Russia. The people of Crimea, they want to be Russian.
Yeah. Well, as I understand it, Stalin basically installed, you know, like 500,000 Russians into Ukraine in an effort to breed out Ukrainians and replace them with Russians. And that legacy is still there.
They also took their, if you don't know, but the Ukrainians were Greek Orthodox.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't know that. That's my heritage
They were Greek. They were Greek Catholics.
Okay.
And
similar. Yeah.
Basically, Stalin came in and told them, well, you're no longer Greek Catholics, you're Russian Orthodox.
He also killed 4 million, starved them to death, too. So, I mean, the Russian history. I mean, I can understand the Ukrainian, you know, independence, you know, based on what that is. It's like the Armenians in Turkey. You know, the Turks tried to wipe out the Armenians, you know, because they were Christian. And the Turks are Muslim.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, that went on, you know, in San Francisco, we had a large Armenian community. Yeah. What's that? Yugoslavia, yeah.
Same exact thing they did.
But the question still remains, if someone's a bad person, you know, a real monster like a Saddam Hussein, like a Putin, like all these different dictators, you know, that have been. Let me ask the question first. Is it our job to send American forces to overthrow them, or is it our job as Americans to join with other countries, putting international pressure in a huge variety of ways to cut them off economically, socially, you know, in every possible way you can think of, deny them all kinds of stuff because we're such a world economy now? That to me seems the better choice than the military option, unless they are directly threatening us, in which case we need the strongest military with the greatest retaliatory force in the shortest possible time to end the conflict before it begins. Does that make sense?
Well, I'll tell you this. First of all, Brandon can't put sanctions because nothing works. Not with him.
I'm not talking sanctions.
Sanctions are weak as hell.
Right. I'm not even talking unilateral sanctions. I'm talking like SWIFT, like getting out of denying them the ability to do financial transactions, like blocking their airplanes, their ships, all commerce, all goods,
he won't refuse ships.
Well, no, but the rest of the world is. Brandon won't because he works with, you know, Russia for some reason. He's either being blackmailed by them. I mean, one last question I want to get to Shelby. China. Brandon gave intelligence for months. This is actually the New York Times report of this. Was giving intelligence of exactly what we knew about Russia. You know, Ukrainian classified intelligence we're giving to Ukraine. They also gave to China, you know, and they said, here's what's really going on. Please convince Russia not to invade. And of course, China, being the double agent, said, of course we'll do that. No problem. And they promptly gave it to Russia and said, hey, guess what we got from those idiot Americans? Here's the classified intelligence. Here's what they know about you. Okay. So the question is,
they said it.
What?
They said, they go, well, I'm sorry, Putin, but this is what he wants to do to you.
I miss your question. I'm missing what you're saying.
No, that's what they did. When Brandon
right.
tried to talk to China, he just went out and just told Russia flat out, this is what he wants to do to you. Here's his business. Here's everything he laid out.
Oh, that's, are you saying this is what Brandon wants
Russia
to do?
Everything.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So no, China. Wait. I'm going to move on here in about 30 seconds. So who are you talking about?
All right, well, then just let me have my last speech before I go.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, okay. Well, so this is what I say. I don't like Zelensky.
Okay.
I love the Ukrainian people, but I know he's a liar.
Okay.
Because I know, because I personally saw him put out pictures, like I said, from 2014 of him pretending mm-hmm. to be in war right now.
Okay.
He's a liar.
Okay.
He's a liar and he's a murderous totalitarian.
Okay. Final point.
How about this? What would we do if we just backed away and let them go?
That's an option. I don't like it, but that's certainly an option, and that's worth considering. So let's feel free to call back tomorrow when Doug Underhill's on. And you're welcome to stick around on the show for a while.
But
I want to get to Shelby. Appreciate it, Rick. Thank you.
Oh, well, let's hang out.
Yeah, man. Come with Shelby to faraway places, wonderful beaches, exotic foods, meet new and fascinating people as Action Radio cruise and travel reporter Shelby Fennett takes you to where dreams become your reality and experiences become your best memories. Yeah, man. Here we go.
So I've always wanted to go to Odessa. I was thinking like a cruise, maybe, you know, a few nights in a hotel, you know, some nice restaurants, things like that. What do you think, Shelby? Is this a good time to go?
To go to where?
Odessa. It just seems like a cool
Odessa.
Place.
Odessa. Yeah, no, it's interesting. My husband went to Odessa, Ukraine, right after it was liberated, actually, in the 90s. He was posting some pictures about it. But they, you know, they were all very excited to be independent, you know. It's just a very sad time for them.
Yeah. Yeah, and the question is what to do about it. I think the world's doing the right thing. I think we're not. I think the best thing we
yeah.
can do is to get our oil flowing again, is to get the price of oil down, to deny Russia the money that they're obviously using in this Ukrainian operation. I'm not even sure how to characterize it. We're going to focus more on that. I don't want to take away from your report, but if you have some time left over as to where to go with this. But I'll be doing a lot of it tomorrow. We'll be doing this a lot. We did a lot yesterday. But to me, it seems like the SWIFT, if we get them out of the banking, if we get to remove their profit from oil, open up our pipeline, open up the Israeli-European gas pipeline, divert energy away from the Russian market, starve them for money, because it's the one that's like their big vulnerable point. That would be the best thing we can do, rather than a strictly military option. We have to think of war as a totality of possibilities as opposed to the single military option. That's how I'm looking
right.
at this.
Yeah, I that sounds very reasonable to me, but unfortunately, I don't think that the people, the powers to be, are on the same wavelength. I mean, it's very sad. I have a lot of friends that live in Eastern Europe, Russia, mm-hmm. and Romania, and you know, they're cutting off the bank accounts. I mean, they're just there's no way to you're not allowed to leave. It's just a lot of.
Well, maybe you can give me some insight on this too. How popular is the Ukrainian government with the people?
This whole on the ground stuff, where people and soldiers are dying, it's all for nothing. It's all for show, because they could just, you know, bomb an area and they get so specific. There's so much biological warfare out there. So
yeah.
It's all a pomp and circumstance that, you know, has no real need. It's just really to get people rallied upon something so that the government can spend what they want. That's how I see it. I don't see it as anything other than a show. because ultimately, and often these, you know, plans are already made way in the boardroom way before, you know, we think there's still a choice, but I don't know that there is. But anyway, you know, I'm generally pessimistic when it comes to the government's choices. But I will tell you, in travel, they have canceled most of all the Russian area ports for cruising.
Which ones are the popular ones? Where do people go in Russia?
The Baltic goes out into St. Petersburg area.
Okay.
That one usually goes out. Most of the major cruise lines do the Baltic, and it often is around May, June. So we're coming up on that. So they're changing all their itinerary there. I would suspect everything will be canceled, diverted. I don't know.
Wow.
Where
are they out of?
The good news.
Where do they sail out of for those?
Well, there's several different areas that they go out of, but St. Petersburg is one of the home ports. Let me see. I have to look that up a little bit.
What, do they go from Sweden or Finland or from Denmark or any of those other countries?
Usually.
They start actually in St. Petersburg?
Yeah, that most of the time they start in St. Petersburg.
So you'd have to fly in there then to start the cruise?
Yeah.
Okay, got it.
Yeah. It's really – I'm kind of happy that there's so much diversion in the sense that nobody's talking about COVID anymore. It's like it disappeared.
Yeah, how about that?
And
that's pretty quick,
huh? It's relieving, you know, on some level, but, like, it's also frustrating because you know that – they focused 100%, and again, people are not asking questions. People are not outraged that now COVID's like over. They're like, oh, yeah, okay, it's over now. It's like
never mind.
Changed. And,
pay no attention.
Yeah, exactly. So it,
yep, okay.
Again,
move
it
along.
Doesn't give me much faith.
Yeah. Well, here's a question for you.
People don't see the errors
ahead,
of their ways. That's for sure.
Well. What is the vaccination rate these days? What is the COVID rate these days? I mean, those figures have like completely disappeared.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I know that I don't hear anybody having COVID like in the testings. Like, you know, as far as like you have to get COVID tested before boarding. I don't hear much about anybody having any issues not boarding because of COVID.
Are they testing at the airports or doing the temperature thing?
With the cruising, you have to get a rapid or antigen test.
Okay.
So they're still doing that. And usually you'll hear, even just through the grapevine, you know, not through the cruise lines, just like, hey, you know, we had some people that had this or that. But you don't even hear that. It's just...
There's been no COVID
like
since Russia invaded Ukraine.
It's gone.
Think about that. There's been no COVID. That'd be a great banner headline. COVID ended as soon as Russia invaded Ukraine. Banner headline.
Well,
COVID's cured.
I mean, anyone that's paid even a little bit of attention can see that, but it doesn't seem to matter to anyone. And I don't know. I just get very sad because
Here's the problem. Here's the problem, you know, being the person you are and the reason you're here and the reason, you know, pretty much everybody who's with Action Radio is here is because we think independently. We look beyond the headlines. We don't knee-jerk react emotionally to every little buzzword story. We're not like the shooting gallery where you hit the thing and it reverses direction, then you hit it again and it reverses direction, you know, like the duck, you know, whatever it is. Most people do that. They go ping, 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 ping from story to story. But when you look at the stories, you start grouping them in your head, and you look for the patterns, and you start seeing these different things going on, you start questioning everything. You know, it's very frustrating because the vast majority of people who don't question, don't see the patterns, don't look beyond the story, don't look at the reasons why. I mean, the most important question not asked is why. So I'm asking, why would Putin go into, you know, Ukraine? He wants Ukraine as part of the Federation. He wants the grain. He wants the minerals. If he turns these people into complete enemies, well, I had a theory yesterday. I'm going to propose it tomorrow as well. Let me run it by you. That he wants to aid enough to show that to show his force, to show that he's willing to commit military forces to this. But I think, you know, there's been remarkably few casualties compared to what there could be. You know, for the people that have died, it's obviously, you know, horrible. But it's like 350 people. It's like 350, last I heard was 350 people killed, 1,500 people injured. Well, you could have done that within the first 5 minutes of an invasion, you know, under two invasions.
It's like
Go ahead.
It's just a show to get people on the side of whatever side they're trying to facilitate. It's a show. Like, it's a
show. Those people are really dead, though. Those folks are really dead.
I know,
though.
So and that's
it's a
what's
big
so
show.
Horrible about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, for them. For them, mm-hmm. it's horrible for anyone. My heart is it aches for these people. It's just so wasteful. Mm-hmm. But I believe from a bigger perspective, from the military, from the government, it's a show. It's a show that they mm-hmm. are willing to do a little. But I think you're correct. He doesn't want to decimate the whole entire area because he wants mm-hmm. the area. For grain, that makes sense to me. I mean, I know he's wanted it since the beginning. He didn't want it, from my understanding, he didn't mm-hmm. want to let it go. And that was kind of a concession, and the eyes were always on the prize there. So, you know, it rallies, like, for instance, this rallies United States. I mean, most of the people I speak to would be fine with us going into war for Ukraine against Russia because
that's insane.
They see
yeah.
that people are dying. And that's what I yeah. mean by it's a show. It's to rally the country in mm-hmm. order to get outraged and be supportive of this and go into war. I mean, this seems to be the pattern that I've looked behind. Mm-hmm. They always try to get the buy-in of the people for reasons. I'm not sure if it's going to matter much in the future, but it mattered before because, you know, we did have sort of more control over spending and things like that. Now we don't even know what's going on. We just, you know that they approve trillions and billions, and we're like, that, okay. You know, it's really so far removed now. But in the day, you had to get people kind of their buy-in. And, of course, you're going to get their buy-in when it's unfair. We want the underdog. We want the right people to win. We don't want people to die. I mean, these are pretty basic belief systems that you can get everybody's buy-in. So I don't know what the big picture plan is, but you probably have more insight than I do.
No, I just am going to guess a lot, you know, but I don't have any more insights. This is why I like talking to you. There's something I was thinking of, though, is the hypocrisy of this whole situation. And this is something that most people, unless you connect the dots, you're not going to see this. We've got, you know, an illegal person occupying the White House. And they just found 20,000 some odd votes in 200,000 votes with mismatched signatures in Arizona. They've got way more than enough proof to show that there are fraudulent elections there and fraudulent elections all over the place. And so you've got somebody who most of us believe, you know, who studied the election issue shouldn't be there. You know, at least we should have some kind of a challenge to find out what's going on. But you've got what I consider a coup d'etat, an illegal government speaking to us from a head, you know, who has no idea where he is, what he's doing or what he's saying. You know, he's reading a teleprompter to talk to us about going to war to create the freedom for another people, you know, all across the world,
yeah.
you know, when our own freedom here is in jeopardy because we're under a coup. That to me is like the ultimate hypocrisy. And I don't think people see it that way. So when you watch tonight,
well, I mean, I've never, I've never agreed with you on what people's perception is, and as I said,
fine.
It really, unfortunately, it doesn't matter that, you know, whether or not it is true or not true that the votes were altered. I mm-hmm. said when he was going in, there is not going to be a debate. There's going to be some people running up and down, but you can't talk too loud or you get your voice gets eliminated, you know.
I'm still here, and my voice is already limited severely by social media. I'm just waiting for Trump Social to open up so I can actually get the word out on the show again. I can't tell you how much we've been censored the last 2 years, so I'm really happy everybody's sticking with us.
Me, I understand. I'm in social media.
But that's
going to
change.
I understand. Yeah,
you know?
I do wonder what's going to – I do think people are the social sentiment out there is they're sick of being censored.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a conversation if one side is just deleted. And that in itself shows
yeah.
guilt. You know, if you have to delete every opposing viewpoint, but at the end of the day, it is their platform. So we're controlled mm-hmm. by that. So it would be wonderful to have a different platform that was again allowing both sides of the story. And, you know, I understand trying to make things on social media, trying to make sure that there isn't a lot of deception, because nowadays, I mean, video, sound,
but,
you can but really...
whose job is that? This is a really, really key point you're making. If you believe there's deception and fake news and problems with what's on social media, whose job is it to do something about that?
Yeah, well, you know, and I feel like that's a great question and it's a complex answer, but I do feel like there has to be a company. I don't think it should be government ran, but, you know, we used to trust companies and newspapers, certain ones.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
that could be, again, you know, obviously it starts with someone who people trust being the,
mm-hmm.
the figurehead and
so,
in charge and kind of taking the responsibility.
An arbiter of free speech. So someone's going to arbitrate the speech.
It's not speech. It's making sure that – so for these days I can get my dog to literally talk on camera and it looks real and it could be, you know, the right voice. And the amount of curation, I mean, that it does not take a whiz to make someone a vocal tone.
Okay. But the answer to bad speech is correct speech. From another source, okay? The free speech,
like,
you know, bad ideas were replaced by good ideas. You know, if something is fraudulent on the net, the cure is to talk about it.
No, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about, like, just wrong information being pretending like it's real. Like, say, for example, a presidential candidate speaking and not saying those words, but having a video of him saying other words that isn't what he said. That's what I'm talking about.
Are you talking
about,
like, Photoshop? Like Photoshop
yes,
stuff?
Yes, exactly.
That's what liability
much,
laws
much
are. That you have. No, you still have libel and slander. You can take them to court. That's
oh,
the
God.
Proper form
so
for that.
That's like that is so difficult to do. You can't even imagine. Maybe it's that we make that less hard to do because I've had death and libel
mm-hmm.
and it doesn't matter. They won't even take the case.
Right. But also,
it's
there's
just,
campaign. If you're talking about elections, then those actually are regulated. There are campaign laws. There's finance laws. There's, I think,
I'm aware
I'm not
of that,
sure.
But they're not implemented. For example, I worked on a campaign, and they have people, and they have laws, and but they don't in so close to an election, they don't enforce them, or they don't they don't take those. So it's not. I mean, these things are all for show. Again, I don't
mm-hmm.
like things for show. I like things that actually work, and that's just for show. So to even say that there are laws and there are people and procedures in place, I for one am confident because I worked on an election, a local election, and I know for
mm-hmm.
sure that they don't do their job, and they don't within a certain amount of time towards election, they don't. Work on that. Like, it's against their rules to work on it so close to election. So I remember...
That's why the stuff comes out last minute. Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Right. That's bizarre. Like, so to tell people that there are
mm-hmm.
that there are procedures in place would make the normal person who has another job that doesn't have time to listen to the spin and understand that within a month of the election or whatever the time frame is, they
mm-hmm.
don't do their jobs and they don't implement these things. It would make them think that these things are true, but they are not. I remember right before the election, the opponents to the person that I was representing came out, and it was a complete and utter lie. It doesn't really matter what the lie is, but it was on it was one of these insert mailings. And it was a complete and utter ridiculous lie, but, like, nothing to do about it. And that, to me, is, like, the saddest part of all this. And I do think that there should be a platform where you can really trust that the information is not lies. It's not
no,
an opinion.
It's not going to work.
An opinion.
It's not
going to
work, and
anyway.
I'll tell you why. It's too subjective. The problem with information is it's way too subjective. The best answer to a lie is to call it a lie. If someone puts out a false video of you, put out the correct one. The way they've corrected these things when NBC edited, like, the Zimmerman tape, you know, and said, he looks black, you know. And then they edited out the question where the cop says, well, can you describe them? Can you tell me their skin color? You know, and they took that out of the conversation, making it look like Zimmerman was a racist. Okay, that was an edited tape. The solution was to play the correct tape. And I've heard that happen several times. So the truth is the solution, but you have to get it out there. Now, it's just politics. You know, I mean, the politicians lie. That's part of the game, is for us to figure out what the lies are and what the truth is. But the greater danger is in the regulation of free speech over the lies of particular politicians. I think that's a far greater danger. So my solution with big tech was, I think, fairly simple in that you bring back liability. So right now, this is a situation where big tech has the authority from Congress. What they do is their censorship is actually legal under the current version of Section 230. And what they're allowed to do, as long as it's in good faith, whatever that means, they can remove anything they think is, quote, otherwise objectionable. And that's okay. That's now covered by Section 230. So lewd, lascivious, excessively violent, graphic, or otherwise objectionable, those are the key words, they can take out a social media. They can block it. They can restrict. They can ban. They can social ban. They can censor. They can do anything they want under Section 230. What they're doing is legal, and they're immune from liability. Okay. So what you do is you change that. You change that, and we did. I wrote two sentences that changed everything. I said that that big tech is absolutely immune from liability for anything that anybody posts or anything done with a search engine, provided that big tech does not touch in any way search engines with algorithms and things like that, or does not touch in any way anything posted on social media. So they maintain their immunity as long as they completely 100% are hands-off what happens with search engines and social media. And then the answer is, but Greg, what about the lewd, lascivious, obnoxious, graphically disgusting, pornographic, all that kind of stuff? That's why we have obscenity laws. It's already covered. Law enforcement has the ability to arrest and prosecute people who break, especially the child pornography laws, things like that. So all that stuff's already covered by law. So you don't give law enforcement authority to big tech. So what you do is you remove the law enforcement authority from big tech to police social media and search engines, and you have it just completely wide open. And then if there's a problem, law enforcement does what it does in every other instance. They will handle it because they have the authority under obscenity, pornography, child pornography, and other laws and things like that. That's how you do it. And then if they violate their immunity, then they don't have immunity. They can be sued. If they touch anything that anybody posts or if they manipulate in any way a search engine, they're open to full liability. That's how I did it. Pretty simple. Shelby's thinking. Okay, Greg.
No. It's an interesting. It's an interesting concept. So that's how you did. You bring it to the Senate? Is that what you're trying to?
That is our bill.
You're trying to write?
That is our bill on amendments to Section 230, and it's actually version two. I had a previous version which I didn't like. I redid it, made it better, and it's very simple. It's two sentences. Social media. Well, they're called interactive computer services. So the totality of social media and search engines is called interactive computer services. In other words, there's a provider and a user. The provider, we know, is big tech. The users are us. The providers need to be immune from anything that the users put on there. Okay? That makes sense because they're just providing the service. They're like AT&T in a phone line back when we were kids. All right? So AT&T didn't care what you said. They didn't police the phone lines. If you said something violent or threatening or threatened a politician, that was the FBI and the Secret Service. It was their job. Okay, the AT&T wouldn't arrest you. AT&T wouldn't cut off your phone. In the same way, big tech should have no law enforcement powers whatsoever. None. It's not their job. They're not sworn officers. But they still deserve immunity from anything published because it's not their responsibility what somebody else does on these interactive computer services. So they're immune from any liability from what people put on there or what people search or how they use their search engines. They're immune from that as long as, and here's the key, as long as they don't touch it, as long as they don't influence, censor, ban, algorithmically touch, taint, trend, shadow ban, as long as they do absolutely nothing. They have no impact. They do not touch in any way, however minuscule. This is
but they're
law.
Immune anyway, aren't they? I mean, I don't know if there's anything that...
Well, immune in what way?
They're immune from any legal obligation to... if someone says something that is wrong or threatening, they're not... They are immune legally for whatever we post.
Well, they are immune. Yes, that's true. So this is the problem. So not only are they immune from anything that goes on social media, they're also immune for anything they do to anybody on social media. So what I'm doing is I kept the first part. I kept their immunity as it is. They are absolutely immune, but I made it conditional. It's conditional on not touching search engines with algorithms, manipulating data. They cannot touch the search engines. They have to be completely open. They cannot touch anything
on
social media.
I've been on social too long. There's too much. There definitely needs to be some sort of gatekeeper of some sort. There really does.
No, I disagree.
I don't agree with that.
No,
yeah, that's you're the
gatekeeper. You're the gatekeeper. You're the gatekeeper for what you want to see. You're the gatekeeper for what you want to look at. You're the gatekeeper. You know, and parents have to be the gatekeepers for kids.
That doesn't really jive with the actual algorithm because violence and sex will get more views, which will enhance the algorithm to show more people. So you'll
You have to get rid of the algorithms.
With all that all the time.
There shouldn't be algorithms. Algorithms manipulate data. You can't have algorithms.
That's
a manipulation.
That's it's based upon, so I don't know that's...
Yeah, I know. It's an interesting question.
That's what it's going to be based upon for everything else, too. Whatever is popular pops up first. That's how you become... That's what makes it social. What do people want to see? That's how social media is...
Well, if they're just counting numbers, that's okay. If they're counting numbers, that's okay. But if they're influencing search engines... See, whenever I look for a story, I have to skip the first page and a half because they're all liberal articles. I don't see the conservative ones until I get to page, 2 and 3. That is an illegal manipulation as far as I'm concerned, because now they're creating the outcome. So if you want to trend and actually count the popularity without touching in any way the actual search, that's okay. So
yeah,
if you're counting.
Manipulated by that right there is going to be easily manipulated by money, because then you could just buy off people to like your stuff. I mean, they have that already.
Yeah, you could. That's called advertising. Yeah. Well, then you have disclosure. And, say what's an ad. They do. They have sponsored things. I see things on Facebook. This is sponsored. Okay, that's fine.
That's different. Sponsored is different than manipulating the algorithm organically, which is done all the time.
Yeah, see, that's what we got. Then people should. Then the liability would have liability for that. They could be sued by competitors. So in other words,
if there was a law that you can't compensate people for liking your page or whatnot, they tried to kind of get into that. It's just very hard to track.
There was
I don't know, I feel it's too simple. I think you're gonna have to go back to the drawing board on that. I like the effort.
No, I don't. I'll tell you why, because I know that a lot of times companies sue each other. Federal Trade Commission, when I was doing my internship in Washington, I think there was a case, and I forgot what it was, either it was Campbell's Soup or Heinz. One of them sued the other because one of them was putting marbles in the bottom of their soup bowl, and all the chunky stuff was floating to the top because the bottom of the bowl was all marbles, right? And so they were sued by one of them sued the other for false advertising. So in other words, those chunky soups look really chunky. And maybe I'm not trying to cast aspersions on either company, but I know there's a case of one soup company who sued another soup company because that soup company had marbles at the bottom of their bowl and all the chunky stuff was forced to the top. So it looked chunkier than it really was. Okay. That's false advertising. That's what the Federal Trade Commission does. They were liable for that. Okay. They proved it in a court of law. So there actually are mechanisms in place for false and deceptive trade practices. Those should be applied to social media. If you put something on social media that can be brought under false and deceptive trade practices, go for it. I don't have a problem with that. That's what those laws are for. But a lot of times they're brought, from one company to another company. So the companies actually police themselves in that regard. They don't let the other companies get away with anything. It's really pretty cool.
Right.
So it's self-regulating.
Right. It's funny, far as just advertising goes, I know my son was very surprised that they use glue for the cheese. Instead of real cheese, they use glue, and there's all kinds of tricks to make those look more yummy. But obviously, they don't all get sued by the Federal Trade Commission.
No, they don't. I mean, look at the picture of your burger at whatever burger joint you like, right? And see the one you get. If I actually did that one day, it was kind of funny. I took a look at my burger. I was right there. I was a kid. I was like early 20s. I think I was in college. I was just feeling particularly snarky. And I opened up my burger. I said, I want one that looks like the one in the picture. And the manager just looks at me. That's a perfectly good burger. I said, no, it's not. I want that one. Make me one of those. He got really mad. I said, look, I'm just kidding. I'm just giving you a hard time. But I really did want one that looked like the picture. And I was actually, it was hysterical. I mean, I knew the manager couldn't do anything. He's under rules. But, it's kind of funny. Let's bring Josie. Let's see what she thinks. Josie, I don't know how much you've heard. We've been we're all over the place. We're talking social media and Section 230.
We're talking social media, which is not all over the place for me. It's
well, that's your
the main part of my life.
Yeah, no, it's critical. I love it. Jesse, you want to get in this chat or you want to talk about, go back to Ukraine? In which case, I'll play your
theme.
Good
morning. Well, I went to bed at 3 in the morning, so I got up about 7:20, so I've been up a little bit only.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, let's do the theme, and then we'll get the Latino report modified to the Ukraine report.
Yes.
She started off as a poor child in Nicaragua, living under communism. And now she is a prosperous small businesswoman with a great family, living the dream as an American citizen. Josie Cossi knows all about both worlds, communism and freedom. She knows where your dreams can come alive and where they can die very quickly. And so her report is as much from experience as knowledge, and her passion and crusade are very real. With connections all over Central and South America, Josie brings you the world south of the U.S. border from personal experience, living, not just reporting, what's happening. And now, the Latina Report with Josie Cossi.
Actually, I made a mistake. It's the one I always make. Shelby, do you have more time or do you have to go soon?
I have 5 minutes.
Okay, good. Don't forget to give your contact stuff before you go. And let's get back to Josie then. Morning, Josie.
Hey, good morning. Yes, I've been on the phone almost every day with the Ukraine, and I want to ask everybody to keep them in prayer. And that's the request that they're asking for the American people. They're asking me why is America not helping. So it's very sad what we're going through right now.
Mm-hmm.
So many Ukrainians are fleeing to go to Poland, the only closest country for them to escape to right now.
Mm-hmm.
The government is only allowing children under 18 to get out and older than 60 because they want the men or women to stay if they're 18 and older to 60 years old. Lots of soldiers are coming in outside of Chernobyl right now, as of yesterday.
Yeah, what's Chernobyl?
So,
Chernobyl is the, for those that don't remember, there was a nuclear explosion there because they don't have a containment vessel. See, nuclear plants in the United States have a containment, it's like, I don't know what, 6 feet of concrete, or it's a ridiculous amount of concrete, totally encasing, nuclear reactors, just so that if something like this happens, the nuclear radiation is contained within the containment vessel. Well, Chernobyl never had a containment vessel because Russian nukes don't blow up. Well, this one did. And I didn't know it was in Ukraine. How far is it from Kiev? And what's the current status? And why would Russia be interested in it? I'm confused about that.
I believe, if I'm not mistaken, it's about an hour and a half from Kiev. I've been 7 miles from Chernobyl. We were, the shoe boxes that Billy Graham's sons gives every year. 1 year they had about 5,000 shoe boxes that I was invited to hand to the children. And the closest school was about 7 miles from Chernobyl. It was amazing to see the look on those children's face when they open each box, and we give them a bag of candy together with that, separately.
Are they still living near Chernobyl? I mean, what's the radiation state? And then I have Shelby a chance because I know she has to go in a couple of minutes. What's going on? I mean, how does this figure into Ukraine? I mean, and who's responsible for the continuing the cleanup?
Yeah, the radiation, you can still, it takes about 100 years for the total radiation to disappear, they say. So we were 7 miles away from that. So, but I don't know. I think it was in my mind, but when I was there, I felt like my body was itching. My eyes were itching. But I don't know, unless it was just mentally. Even when I went to the museum in Kiev, which I've been there a couple times, your body's kind of like itching when you leave the museum because they have a lot of things like windows and pictures, all kinds of stuff from the explosion, from people's houses. Like a little pig was walking right outside the Chernobyl plant and the skin started just falling off the body of the little piggy, and people took pictures. One of the young men that helped us translate, he has cancer now because of the Chernobyl, but slowly it's been getting to him. But it was horrible what happened, and people in the Ukraine were not told what was happening with the explosion. People were nearby like nothing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They didn't have the news. They heard the news from America in a newspaper, what really happened, but people did not know anything.
Shelby?
But,
I'll get to you in a second. Yeah. Go ahead, Jesse.
Well, I saw that.
Go ahead,
I saw the document. I saw quite a few documentaries on Chernobyl, and I don't doubt at all that what you were feeling was legitimate, because you're not exposed to that, so you're not used to it. So your body your skin's the biggest organ, and your eyes are sensitive. So that makes sense to me. I mean, it's just heartbreaking. Isn't enough of a word to even describe how horrible it is, that the irresponsibility of Russia to do something like that, and then of course not to tell the people. That's pretty well documented, and it's just to do that to Mother Earth, and it's still, you know, it goes into the ocean. Fukushima is still into the ocean. It's just horrible. Mm-hmm. Like, the whole thing makes me very angry and disgusted with humans that make these decisions. But anyway, I'm really sorry to hear that, and it's a hard time. Like, I don't know. I just don't know. I just feel like they're causing chaos every which way. Whoever they are, the powers to be, and it makes me angry for the future. And I'm really sad about it all. So we are going to do a non-vaxxed, unvaxxed friendly resort trip to DR for Halloween. Singles based, but we have fun couples too. We are going to do that this year because we feel
there's
a need.
Where's
for it. But DR, Dominican Republic.
Got it.
Yeah. Mm. And it's the right price. So I'll get you more info on that, but you could always go to travelfund.biz. But I don't want to spend, I have to run, but I appreciate that you come on and tell everybody the truth and what's happening on the ground there and what you've experienced. Yeah. And people just do not understand the gravity of the situation. So many people here were just so insanely lucky, and we just have, you know, they just don't have any clue. Anyway.
Just make sure to stay tuned as you go. Listen to the rest that I have to share with you guys this morning, okay?
Okay. I'm Shelby. You're fabulous. Bye-bye.
Bye, Shelby. Thanks so much. Great chat today.
Bye-bye. Okay, so besides the Chernobyl, which we all know what happened a while back, many weapons are being donated to the Ukraine from different countries right now.
Mm-hmm.
But there are ways right now, which is, you know, taking time to get through to Poland to come to Ukraine. Many people in the Ukraine do not know how to use guns. They never own a gun before. So this is difficult times for Ukrainian people right now, even though they're keeping women and men not to leave the country, because they have to fight them for their country right now, you know. Many families are sleeping in underground in the subway tunnels, you know, like it looks like tunnels. And I've been there many times, taking the subway, the train, you know, underground.
Mm-hmm.
In Kiev, especially, huge. And normally stinks very bad underneath, because there's a lot of bums, alcoholic people, druggies, a lot of people selling merchandise. It's very smelly under the ground there, under the subways.
So is Boston's. When I used to live in Boston, their underground stunk. Because all the homeless folks would live down there live down there.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, it was pretty horrible.
So many people with their children run to stay and take safety over there right now under the subway. There is a lot of fake news right now that they're saying 4,000 Russians were killed and all that. Where's the pictures? Where the evidence? I'm waiting to see that.
Okay.
So it's just. There's a lot of pictures coming out. You know, remember the picture of the children in the cages at the border. They came out in 2014.
Right.
And then they were blaming Donald Trump about those pictures. Well, a lot of this is going on right now with the media. They're bringing a lot of pictures about the war going on in the Ukraine. And a lot of the pictures are like pictures that they were attacking Israel and pictures from 2014 in Ukraine.
Yep.
So they're getting
Rick
caught
was saying that
a
earlier.
Lot of this media.
Yeah, you're confirming what Rick said in the first hour. He was talking about the same thing, that there's a lot of Zelensky. I know that. I'm just telling you that Zelensky's, the president, you know, his military uniforms is a 2014 picture. So it's just interesting to hear that that word's getting out that this is a bunch of crap. So what's really going on? How bad is it? Is it true that 350 people have been killed or thereabouts and some 1,500 injured, which seems remarkably low considering what it could have been under a full-scale invasion? This seems very limited, driven, and specific. And that's kind of what I get to. Or if you have more stuff you want to report too. I mean, you know, like I say, feel free.
Yes, I do. I do have more
Go
stuff.
Go for it. All right, let's get to it.
Okay. When you invade a country, when you take over a country, you start shooting and killing anything that moves, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So this is my opinion and stuff that I heard. It's not 100% guarantee what I'm going to say here. I lived through communism. I know what happens when you take over a country. So normally that happens. You shoot anything in sight. This is not the case in the Ukraine. In the Ukraine, what we think is happening, the Obamas, the Clintons, the Bidens, that's the cesspool of corruption for them for years and years and years. So what we believe that is happening is there's about 12 plants that the Bidens, Obamas, Clintons have built in the Ukraine, bioweapon labs. So Putin, President Trump, and president from Ukraine are all working together on this. This is what we believe.
Okay.
So they're making everybody believe that there's a war, that Russia is attacking and all that, in order for them to destroy all these plants. There were four of those labs in Kiev, the capital. Okay. That's why everybody's freaking out and everything. So what happens is the deep state, which is our government, are so upset about it, and they have hired, you know, the Antifa, Black Lives Matter in our country, destroying everything. That's what's happening in the Ukraine right now. The neo-Nazis are the ones attacking civilians. They're doing everything to kill whoever they kill, which is not a lot of people right now, okay? And most of these people in the Ukraine, they're indoors. They're afraid. They hear all this boom, boom everywhere, okay? It's the neo-Nazis doing that, because if Russia wanted to wipe out Ukraine, oh, he would have done it already, 1, 2, 3.
Well, that's
okay,
kind of you know, we've been talking
hours.
About that for months. Yeah, I mean, Russia, it would be easy. I mean, it'd be easy for us to wipe out all of Cuba. It's not a good idea,
yeah.
You know, but we could.
Russia
you know.
Has the power. Okay?
Yeah, exactly. If we
so,
wanted to take over Cuba and
so,
make it a resort, we could do it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Anytime he wants.
But we shouldn't.
So
yeah.
We,
yeah. Okay.
We believe that he's working together, because Donald Trump promised the American people, the Democrats and Republicans, the American people, he promised that he will get to the bottom of this. In the bottom of the swamp, it's part of the Ukraine, that the Clintons, Obamas, Bidens, and Bill Gates, George Soros, everybody's involved. So we believe that this is what's happening over there right now. And the Ukrainian people do not have a clue, and most of the world do not have a clue what's happening. Because I keep telling my friends in the Ukraine, I was on the phone till 3 in the morning arguing with a young girl that I know since she was 10 years old. I keep telling me, send me pictures from your phone. And you know what's happening, Greg?
What?
They keep sending me lots of pictures, which I got last night in video, from the internet. So the internet is putting the Ukrainian people in so much fear at the moment, because I have mm-hmm. friends in Kiev, I have friends in Nizhyn, I have friends in a couple small little areas that I've been talking to. So it's not just in Kiev that it's happening. And one of the pastor's daughter with her little boy and husband and pastor and wife, Mama Luba, they were fleeing yesterday morning out of Kiev, and they got as far as an hour, and then they started hearing all this boom, 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 and they turned around, and I don't think they made it back to their apartment, and I don't know where they spent the night. But she said, we're running. And I was on the phone with her. She said, I got to hang up in order for me to see where can I go where there's not weapons and things. I don't know if they're tracking that with their phone. And mm-hmm. she hung up quickly on me. And also the other problem that is happening is they're running out of food, people indoors.
Yeah.
Because they're in so much fear, Greg. And some of them are fleeing. They're taking a chance. But what's happening is the ones that they're getting killed right now in the Ukraine, different areas, it's because they're trying to get out of from indoors. But Russia is not killing people. It's not Putin. It's the neo-Nazis being paid by our government, our United States government, which is the fake government right now, Joe Biden. So this is horrible. I was trying to explain to this young lady. She doesn't want to believe me, but it's okay. She'll find out when everything is done. The president from the Ukraine has released a lot of his the people that were in prison mm-hmm. by the ex-government in Ukraine. He has released all of them. And, of course, some of them are criminals. Some of them are very good people that were arrested by his ex-president over there. So things are a chaos in Ukraine. People are crying on the phone to me. It's very, very sad to me because I personally know so many people. I did missions over 18 years in the Ukraine. I understand quite a bit of the language, which is it's kind of weird for a Latina woman like me to understand Russian, you know. But I did missions
hey, Vladimir,
que
pasa? No, I'm kidding. Yeah.
Good morning in Russian. It's dobre utra. Dobre utra.
Dobre utra. Yeah.
Dobre
but with a Spanish
utra
accent.
Means good morning.
You speak Ukrainian with a Spanish accent. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, I do. But believe it or not, there's mm-hmm. a lot of Ukrainian, which is like Russian.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot that is like Spanish words. I was like, what? And it just kind of blow my mind when I first got there, and I understood some of the stuff like the first week I was there.
Oh, that's
kind of cool.
Well, that'd be interesting to trace the origins of Spanish, you know, the Romance language, you know, the Latin mm-hmm. languages, you know, Spanish, French, and English. Then you got the Germanic languages, and then you've got the Russian languages. You know, the Slavic languages, mm-hmm. and it's just where the origins are. It'd be kind of interesting. Anyway, I got a guest coming at 8 o'clock, but I got a couple of things I want to explore here. This first idea of the bioweapons. Let's start with the bioweapons labs. When I looked at mm-hmm. the map, there's a whole bunch of bioweapons labs in Ukraine. Why?
Yes.
There's like 30.
There's 12.
You know, was it 12 of them? It looked like more. Maybe I was looking at a map with a bunch of others.
I
12
think it's
bioweapons
12.
Labs?
Yeah, I think it's about 12. You have them up with them, 12 or 15.
I don't have them right now, but I'm.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's all over in the Ukraine, but four of them were right there in the area of Kiev, the city.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So what you see is they're burning those labs, part of Donald Trump's agenda with Putin. They're together. And President Trump speaks about four languages. That's why he was communicating privately with Putin. And people did not know. So we believe he speaks four languages, including Chinese. So let me tell you.
Putin speaks Chinese?
Believe,
that wouldn't surprise me.
No. President Trump speaks.
Oh, Trump speaks.
Russian.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, he speaks Russian. And we believe that he speaks Chinese, too, to communicate with the president from China. So I don't know who's in it, but eventually we're going to know. Do you remember when President Trump was in with Putin, and Putin gave him a soccer ball. You remember that?
No, I don't remember that.
Okay. He presented him a soccer ball, and we were like, that's odd.
Mm-hmm.
Because Donald Trump says, where is the evidence, he goes, of the Clintons, you know, since Russia knows everything, you know.
Right.
And President Putin gave the ball as a gift to Donald Trump, and Donald Trump handed it to Melania. Inside, we believe that inside that ball is a flash drive with all the evidence, and the ball was given to Melania, and Melania gave the flash drive to their son, because Byron, he's a pro when it comes to computer. He can hack any computer. He can get into anything. He's the sharpest kid, they're saying.
Okay, so you're losing me a little bit in the details. We're going to spend more time on this, but let's go back to the bioweapons. Are these bioweapons labs themselves? And why are there so many in Ukraine? And are they Russian labs? Are they Ukrainian labs? And why does Ukraine need 12 bioweapons labs?
Bill Clinton's, the Clintons, the Obamas, the Bidens, they've been building all these labs for years and years and years.
To do what?
And also they have, like, I don't know what they're using it for, bioweapons. You know, there's a lot of uranium.
But we have bioweapons labs
Ukraine.
Here. We've got labs here. We've got North Carolina and some other places.
Yeah, but
the military has bioweapons labs.
Yeah, we believe that this has been built by the deep state years ago. And they also have, like, military stations in different areas in the Ukraine. And that's what's been blowing away.
Okay, so this is where I start to get a little skeptical and think to myself, okay, well, wait a minute. So yeah, and I'm trying to make sense as to why these are important. So we know they have bioweapons labs. So let's put together something else. Now, here's what's interesting. I got Angie on the line now too. She's kind of listening in.
Okay.
Angie Hinson, my next guest, and so we'll get her all caught up here in a little bit. But we'll get her on the line here in a little bit. But whenever Ukraine fascinates me, because whenever there's a problem, Ukraine shows up. You know, Ukraine's part of the equation. You know, Lieutenant Vindman. You know, the person that tried to convict Trump of espionage is Ukrainian. Okay, he's Ukrainian born. He happens to be a lieutenant colonel in our army. You know, for now. But he was offered the Secretary of Defense of Ukraine. I wish he'd taken it, because then we could have revoked his U.S. citizenship. He's a naturalized American, like you and me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you serve in a foreign military, that's it.
Oh yeah.
Your citizenship can be revoked. Naturalized citizens actually rather easy to revoke. You know, natural born you can't revoke ever. But a naturalized, people don't realize, well, it's a lot more difficult. But being a naturalized citizen is actually very conditional on you not working for a foreign government, you know, like Ilhan Omar, you know, not committing immigration fraud like Ilhan Omar, and not, you know, being a spy like Ilhan Omar. You know, in other words, not being Ilhan Omar. You know, if you don't do what she does, then, you know, your citizenship's probably safe, but hers probably should be revoked, too. That's another story.
It should be revoked.
Oh, excuse me. But the point is that every time there's a problem, Ukraine keeps popping up. When Brandon
pops up.
Said, you're not getting the money, you know, don't investigate my son, it was Ukraine.
Yeah.
When you look into Hunter, where is he getting his money from? Ukraine.
Yep.
You know, and you keep going back, you know, and all these, this country keeps popping up over and over and over again. So what the hell's going on?
It's been the base for the Democrat Party corruption in the Ukraine. So that's part of the swamp, we believe. Like I said, I'm not 100% sure of what I'm telling you. But this is the theory that we're a lot of people are coming up with. Some of the intelligent military, ex-military are telling us that. And we're just, you know, we have to see. You know,
so what are the Democrats using it for? Is it for money? Is it to hide stuff? Is it for
money?
So
money,
they use Ukraine for money.
Thing.
So
yeah,
do they give it to Ukraine? Do they get it from Ukraine? Do they trade it there? Do they do secret deals there? You know, is that like their hidden
secret deal?
You know, are there election machines there, like Barcelona, Spain? I mean, what's so magical about Ukraine? Of all the places, right next to Russia.
Yeah, okay. I don't know about the election machines, but I know they've been laundering money for years, and whatever they're doing with those labs, but they own those labs, and everything should be coming out.
Yeah. We need to connect the dots on this. And the last connection I want to make, I'm going to take a break for a couple minutes, and then we'll get to Angie. But the last connection is on these neo-Nazi groups you're talking about. Now, the last thing Ukrainians, you know, want on their land, the only people they hate probably worse than the Russians are Nazis. You know, and so to have a neo-Nazi left, I mean, we're talking real Nazis. We're not talking about people that are accused of being Nazis in this country who are actually conservatives. We're talking about leftist, ultra-socialist, fanatical, totalitarian, you know, fascist Nazis, real Nazis, you know, the ones that went across Europe, Eastern Europe to invade Russia. So you had communists attacking Nazis. You had left-on-left violence here. And I want to make this really clear for people so everybody understands what's going on here. Okay. So why would we be sponsoring and why would Ukraine be tolerating any neo-Nazi groups within their country?
Well, this is well organized by the deep state. It's just like look at how they organize Black Lives Matter and in our country.
Why Ukraine? Ukraine's already corrupt.
Why?
They already have a deep state government.
Why?
They got their own deep state.
What?
Why would they need to kill their own citizens with neo-Nazi groups? And how come that's not exposed?
It's not the president of the Ukraine. It's our deep state corruption, Greg, because what's happening is Russia's coming to just destroy all this left and all these things from the deep state. They're trying to get rid of them. And so now they're using the neo-Nazi to hurt innocent people. So they can blame Russia, and this is what's happening. The whole world.
But everybody's got a phone. These groups, unless they could be seen, they could be videoed. I mean, everybody's got a phone now. You can video anything. Somewhere along the way, somebody would have had to have videoed a neo-Nazi, you know, pretending to be a Russian or something, or a soldier. There has to be even a gathering, even previous gatherings before Russia did it. There has to be something on in somebody's phone or camera. About these neo-Nazi groups, do you have any evidence, anything to show who these people are or anything like
that? No, I don't have evidence right now. It's like the evidence that the news are saying 4,000 Russians are dead. Where are the evidence? You know what I mean? It's not out yet.
I don't believe 4,000 Russians are dead. Yeah. Not with only 350 Ukrainians dead. That doesn't make sense. But, you know, truth is the first casualty of war.
I
absolutely agree with that. But it's just, some parts of this, they don't make sense yet. They don't make sense to me yet.
It's just like
the dots aren't connecting.
It's okay.
Yeah, I know.
They
That's
will.
That's why we talk
they
about
will
it.
Eventually.
Yeah. All right. Well, I hope so.
But for the sake of the Ukraine, Greg, I hope that I'm right, or I hope that what I heard is right, because if not, the Ukraine will be done because Russia will take completely control of the Ukraine, and that's what I was telling this young lady last night that she was crying to me. The why, and I don't believe. I said, well, I hope I'm right, because if that's the case, Donald Trump will handle everything with Russia and president from Ukraine instead of, you know, going the other way. So hopefully
I don't know if it's worth the price. All right, Pianki, and Angie, you're live too, so we'll get you in here in a second as well. Pianki,
go ahead.
Jelson, is it true that Russian bombers have landed there in Venezuela?
What you said?
Is it true?
CNN's reporting Russian bombers in Venezuela. Well, that's
CNN. Yes.
Well, there's a lot of Russians in Venezuela. Oh yeah, definitely. And Muslims too.
Said they're bombers. They're bombers. They're supersonic bombers.
Oh, the backfires.
Yeah.
They can fly twice. They can fly twice in the speed of sound.
Mhm. Well.
Is that true?
I don't know.
You mean like our B1s were supposed to do?
Yeah.
Those ones? Yeah, okay. Yeah.
I'll send you that link. You know, that's another problem, too.
Venezuela.
You talk about this dark statement. The news media is just involved in that seemingly to me than anything, than anyone else. You know, they put out all sorts of information that's slanted and biased that have you thinking
war is good for ratings. I mean, they love wars. What I don't understand, let me introduce Angie to the show here, too, because she's been listening for a while. And so this is kind of how things work around here, Angie. It's a free-for-all. You know, people come, they stay around, you know, guests overlap. There's no real form to what we do. It just kind of depends on what's happening. But I think it's much more fun and spontaneous and interesting to do it that way. So, Angie, welcome to the show. Do you want to add to this discussion here? What do you think?
I probably don't have much to add to that.
Okay, well, that's fine. We'll stick around then for a bit, and we got some another family law disaster in the makings. And you know, with all things in the world, I think we need to talk about this just simply because so many people at some point in their life are going to be, you know, victims of family court. We'll get on that just a little bit, and then maybe we can talk about some other stuff. But I want to kind of finish this up a little bit with Josie and Bianchi. Because, and I actually have someone tomorrow you're going to be interested in, Doug Underhill. Josie, do you know Doug? Navy officer? He was supervisor in Escambia County for a while. Okay. So he's, you know, great military analyst. We're going to have him on, and we're going to get sort of a military perspective, try and get in the head of Putin, see what's going on. Well, let's see if we can I want to do this real quickly now. Why is Putin doing this? I always like to ask the why question. You know, why? What's in it? You know, go ahead.
I think there's something going on. Somebody said that Putin and Trump are probably two or maybe one of the great leaders that's left on the planet.
Yes,
and
they are.
Like you hear the news saying dictator Putin, dictator Putin. He's not a dictator. I mean, I don't see him as being a dictator as we would describe one.
Well, he's been elected.
So something.
Yeah.
He's been elected, yes.
Do you know what I heard
the
other day?
They don't have no Dominion machines in their country.
Do you know that Russia has a 13% flat tax and a very low welfare state?
Oh, absolutely they do, yeah. You see how meager and humble they live, too. Even their military people live humble. So it's something going on.
13% flat tax? You know, if they had more freedom, they'd be a booming economic power if they just let their economics go.
If you notice, Russia is not part of that global warming and all that lies. There's a lot of stuff that this young man last night in a video I was watching. I was like, man, that makes sense. There's a lot of stuff. But anyway, all I ask is prayer for all these people because they're like innocent. All these children, whoever's getting in the way, probably going to get hurt. And that's what's happening right now. And people are panicking and blaming Russia. But I truly believe President Putin is really helping instead of destroying Ukraine. He's working with Trump. That's my belief.
Okay, so let me just ask that one last question. If he's helping Ukraine by doing this, what is his end result? How is Ukraine going to be helped by this?
Well, if it's true.
I don't know. What...
Hold on, Jackie. Hold on, Bianchi.
I don't know what Trump is going to do, but I know Crimea belongs to Russia, and I don't know if he's going to take the other little city next to it where I bought that church. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. I really don't know the end result, but I know the swamp is being drained in the Ukraine and because of the child trafficking, like you will not believe. In the Ukraine. That's part of the reason that the child trafficking will stop coming from the Ukraine.
That's a whole different topic, but that's very interesting. Okay, yeah. Bianchi? Yeah, what are you going to say?
You know, I agree with Josie. Like I said before, there's something going on. And the only way that you know any different is the many news sources, and we know that they're contaminated like spoiled milk. You're just going to have to wait and see.
Well, I'm curious if the Russian soldiers are welcomed or attacked. You know, that'd be evidence. And I want to see more of the, you know, if there are actually neo-Nazi groups. I find that hard to believe that they would be tolerated in Ukraine just because of the history of Nazis in Ukraine. But that's something interesting. Okay, let's take a break here. We'll totally change subjects a little bit.
Okay.
And then we might not get back to it, you know, based on time. So we'll see what goes on. So take a break for a couple minutes and we'll be right back. Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try. Even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Pankless Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com.
This is Greg Pankless for Strike Force, your source for pure energy. Strike Force is a concentrated energy drink that turns a half liter of your favorite beverage into an energy drink. It contains caffeine, taurine, B vitamins, and potassium. You make your energy drink yourself. Here's how. Add one pack to a standard half liter water bottle or 16 ounce glass to create a full power energy drink. No sugar, no calories, no stirring, no shaking. Strike Force energy drinks come in original, grape, lemon, and orange. Each flavor pack is a liquid that adds an explosion of flavor to any beverage. Here's the best part. Action Radio is an affiliate of Strike Force, so our listeners get a 20% discount. All you do is add our code WYL to the discount code window at checkout. That's WYL. WYL comes from our website, Write Your Laws. So, you can get your energy drink, get a 20% discount, and help Action Radio change the relationship of we the people to our government. Not bad. Strike Force is at StrikeForceEnergy.com. That's StrikeForceEnergy.com. Start your engines. Radio, part of the ADHD Radio Network, the ultimate free speech zone. We the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed, and have the power through juries to nullify the laws by which we do not consent to be governed. At Action Radio, we don't report the news. We are the news. Every other show reports what has happened. We talk about what can happen. From the questions no one has thought to ask, to the answers no one has thought to consider, to the actions no one has dared to take, that is Action Radio.
So I want to apologize for that several-second gap. I'm having mouth problems this morning. I'm on the manual one, and it's not scrolling as well. I've got to get some – my batteries ran out. I got to fix that. But anyway, that's what that's all about. So occasional glitches. It's a little technical difficulty here. Simple things always screw up your life. All right, if enough delays here. I'm sorry. Let's bring on Angie and a new person for our show here, hopefully a regular visitor with lots of talk about on several different subjects, and that's going to be fun to cover over time. But she's got a special presentation at first, so let me turn it back over to you, and tell a bit about yourself, and welcome to Action Radio, and where do you want to go from here?
Good morning, everybody. Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome.
I am Angie Hansen, and right now I'm actually sitting up in North Dakota. I had to return up here to meet the monsters of the courts up here face-to-face. I've been down in Colorado for the last 5.5 years, but was up here before then. So, seriously corrupt system up here. Absolutely no oversight, no accountability anywhere.
Why is this so universal? I'm going to have a bunch of questions. Probably half of them are impossible to answer. But, I get so disgusted. I've been covering this issue since the show started. I went through family court, divorced myself, tried marriage once, can't recommend it. But this is universal. And this isn't just our country. This is worldwide. Family courts suck. Divorce sucks. It's almost worth not getting married. And I think a lot of people are actually making that choice now. Why should I get married if I get to go through ultimately 50 to whatever percentage of people are going to have a horrible divorce at some point? And you think to yourself, is this worth it? Of course, that's the breakdown of the family right there. So that may be part of the plan. But North Dakota, I mean, they're nice people up there. That's frozen wasteland. You got to depend on your neighbor. That's a place where, you know, people freeze to death in their cars if they pull over on the highway and someone doesn't, you know, help. You know, it's really cooperative land up there. North Dakota has a bad family court system, unless they pick the worst North Dakotans. You know, the poorest law school graduates, the worst, you know, lawyers, the worst judges. Oh, we'll make you in family court. This seems to be the way this thing works out. How am I doing?
I think so, because they all go to the University of North Dakota, and they're all from, you know, the one school. And no, North Dakotans aren't as nice as you think. Sorry. Now,
uh-oh.
I live here.
Tell me the truth.
Yeah.
No. Don't be shy. Be brave.
They're cold. They're very cold.
Really?
Very standoffish. If you're not born and bred here, you can forget it. They'll tell you that they're Germans from Russia. So make of that what you will.
Having known Germans and Russians, that's a little contradictory.
Well, that's exactly what they say, and I've always thought, huh?
Germans from Russia. Okay, yeah.
They're Germans from Russia. Some people can be very nice. There's, they'll feed you, but then they'll send you back out, you know, and just, yeah. I never liked it up here, so I landed in a wonderful place down by Walden, Colorado, 5.5 years ago, and I absolutely love the mountains and, you know,
what's the difference?
An elevation.
They're both mountainous states, but what makes Colorado different from North Dakota? In terms
of there's
people?
No mountains in Dakota, hon.
No more
there's no
in North Dakota. Oh.
No.
Wide open plains? Wind sweeping down?
Plains.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Plains and wind in North Dakota. No, where I live in Colorado, I'm at about 8,100 feet elevation.
Mm-hmm.
And surrounded on all sides by a mountain ridge. Amazing. So I had to leave my motherland, as I call it, because that's home to me, and come up here and begin my battle again. My ex was wrongly given custody due to slaughtering my character in court. And
this is such a familiar story. You know, I hate to jump in here for, you know, there's a pattern. I don't know why we can't solve this pattern. Josie, if someone wants to, like I say, feel free to join any time here. But this pattern, there's one spouse that gets favored by the court, the wrong one, the abusive parent. I mean, Michael Volpe is famous for talking about several cases like this, you know, and Angel Law, who's been on the show too, same thing, Crusaders for this. But it's always the same pattern. There's the wrong parent, gets the kids, the narcissist, the most evil, you know, sociopathic, destructive person, gets all the power. They usually have the money. They usually have the family behind them. They either know the lawyers or get to know the lawyers. The judge and the lawyers, you know, they all go to the same country club. They all have the same free martini lunch. It's a club. They work together. The guardians are in on this. The social workers are in on this. And it's always the same. I'm sick of this story. You know,
it's due to the funding behind everything.
It's the which now? Due to the what?
The Title IV funding that's paid to the states, and also child support funding is a part of it, and that sounds crazy, but there's some people behind the scenes that they've twisted this and corrupted it.
Okay.
And so it's not doing what it was intended to do because there's nobody to oversee it, and they just it's a free-for-all. So... yeah, it's been bad up here. I've had this judge, I've asked him to recuse himself a couple times back in July of 2015. He refused. And under federal law, 28 U.S.C. 455, recusal is mandatory, not discretionary.
Yeah, I would just say to be careful with names. If someone's publicly mentioned, publicly known, the name is on the case, then you can mention them by name. If they're private citizens, we're going to keep them private. But corrupt judges need to be known. You know, if someone's violating the law openly and you can show it, then feel free. That's just my standard of caution. Yeah. We'll keep the private citizens private and the public citizens public. Yeah. Okay, go ahead.
I've put ads in the Bismarck Tribune over the years, calling him, his name is David E. Reich of the South Central Judicial District in Bismarck, North Dakota. And yeah, I've run ads in the Bismarck Tribune. I'm running an ad now on Wednesdays and Saturdays in the Tribune, that I'm a independent activist and I'm doing research on the corruption here. So I ask people had a bad experience with an attorney or a judge. And I've been running this ad and people are emailing me left, right, and side and saying, yes, I had trouble with this judge. Yes, I had trouble with this attorney.
Same judge?
This is my case. Not all the time.
Judges. Okay.
A lot of other judges here too.
Okay.
But there's no oversight because the Judicial Conduct Commission is under the North Dakota Supreme Court, and I have an issue with that. I think that a Judicial Conduct Commission could be, should be separate and aside from any of the court. Don't you think?
Oh, I do. I was just going to suggest you write a bill on it. I mean, we need a whole section on family law. And it's something
I'm,
that I don't...
Let's go.
Yeah, go ahead.
Show me how... Exactly. We need to have a standalone Judicial Conduct Commission, and it has nothing to do with the Supreme Court. Getting our legislators on board with these bills, I have a few ideas I'd like to see put through, and I have looked to our legislation years back. I did a petition of remonstrance. I send everything certified with return receipt, and they, I got all the green cards back. And not one single response from any of the, and that was,
well, legislators,
you know, like,
don't want to see legislation. I know that sounds contrary, but this is something I'm finding out too, that as you're trying to advocate stuff, they don't want to hear it. So what I decided way back a couple of years ago is that rather than go directly to the legislature, legislators, and hopefully they would submit bills and then they would make news and they would go from there, I decided to go the opposite direction, to the people with the bills and then to the media and then to the legislators. So the legislators are the last place you go. And so the first place you go is you write the bill, and then you circulate it here and any other talk show you want to talk about. See, the nice thing about the bills that we write on writeyourlaws.com, because we are the only people on the planet doing what we do here, you know, giving people an open forum to write legislation and then to get it out, you know, all over the place. And anybody else is free to take on any bill because we don't direct that kind of stuff. We're, you know, we're not a like a professional lobbying organization. It's really up to people. But that also gives you the freedom to decide, you know, which bills, how many times, you know, where you're going to send them. But that's what's really needed, is to get more people involved in the actual sending of the bills, and especially to media. So you're, you know, you're free to go to any other media with anything on any of our Action Radio bills. I mean, I want that. That's why I set it up. Any other talk show, talk about our bills on other talk shows, see if they'll help, see if they want to work with legislation, see if they want their audience, you know, their audience is probably more interested than they are, because, you know, talk show hosts are kind of a, they're sort of a program lot. They're, as I say, raising complaining to an art form. That's kind of what talk shows do. So we got to get them out of that. We got to get them in, you know, solutions mode rather than complaining and simply ratings mode. And so, you know, that's going to be a problem. That's a struggle. But certain hosts will pick up and go, you know what, I really want to be part of the solution. I don't want to just sit here and complain for ratings, you know, and have nothing to show for it at the end of 20 years of complaining for ratings. You know, it's kind of an interesting phraseology, I thought of, but that's really what they're doing. You know, I love talk radio. All that's their art form. You know, the biggest complaints for the biggest ratings, you know, to get the most, you know, advertising bucks, and that's their reward. My reward is completely different, creating something that people can use to advocate their own freedom. To me, that is a far greater reward. Yeah, I need some money too. I'm not going to be stupid about it. And I got some toys. But really, there's a reason to do this so that you can come along and we can work on a bill. And actually, we have a few bills already. We really need a coalition of family law people to take a look at several bills that we have and either put them together, group them differently, take them as a package, do whatever you think best, and get them to both state and Congress. I'm not sure much of this is Congress. I think it's really more of a state proposal. Would I be right on that? That family court's mostly state jurisdiction? Are there any federal family court places or laws or things like that?
Not that I'm aware of. I know that, like, our, you know, your state legislators, they have the sole power of impeachment of these judges, say. That's why that petition of remonstrance that John Gentry has really been spearheading, that is
Tell
so
me about
important.
All that. Who's John Gentry and what's Remonstrance? And let's hear that story.
Petition of Remonstrance. It's in our, gosh, I am not the one to pit for that.
Oh, well, just tell me what you know. And if you want to talk about this stuff, that's okay too. But we always, you know, if you know John Gentry, you know, invite him on sometime and we'll continue. Because I've never heard of that. What is a petition of remonstrance? We'll start there.
A way to address the state legislation,
okay,
by bringing in a bill, holding them accountable, holding their feet to the fire of mm-hmm. what their job is, what they're supposed to be doing. And it's a way to bring that bill through the legislation, but they have the sole power of impeachment of these judges.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so many people that don't know that.
Do they know it? Do they know it themselves? I mean, we still got a Supreme Court that thinks they have lifetime appointments, and millions of people actually believe that nonsense. They have petitions,
right,
that they have terms of good behavior. That's it.
Yeah.
You know, but even in Congress, Amy Coney Barrett, who I would have thought no better, you know, talked about her lifetime appointment. I said, really? And you're going for the Supreme Court? I would get rid of you right there, because it's not a lifetime appointment. That's like saying Marbury
right.
versus Madison is settled law. Settled? Are you kidding? That's the basis of judicial tyranny. So I don't know family law, a little bit of constitutional law. But, you know, you listen to these judges, they're willing to violate their own oath of office. You know,
they do it every day.
Go ahead, tell me. Yeah.
They do it every day. Mm-hmm. I've had, I've been up here at war for the last 2 months, just solid. This is what I've been doing. Mm-hmm. And I have sent several very good complaints to the Judicial Conduct Commission on this judge, who's actually gone so far as to bar me from filing.
Oh, isn't that special?
And, right? I must have done something. I had him lawfully served a complaint and claim against him, summons and complaint.
Uh-huh.
And 2 hours after he received that, because they have the sheriff's service to prove it, mm-hmm. he says he has the state court administrator, Sally Hallowa, send an email to all clerks of court, high priority, concerning Angie Hansen, me,
mm-hmm.
that I am not allowed to file in any district court in North Dakota.
Okay.
And that was,
I think they cut out the word allow. It's for some reason that just got missed. That's the whole key to this all. So she said, he said to tell her to tell all the courts that you're not allowed to file. Really? Have I got that right? Like I said, we missed a couple of words there. Go ahead.
Yes. I am not allowed to file. I'm barred from filing, whatever. And mm-hmm. that was April 6th of 2016, and they're still holding my feet to that to this day.
And in the face of civil rights commissions and laws to the contrary, how can any judge order that you can't file a petition?
Well, on the paper, it says, on the order, it says, regarding parenting time or custody. Okay.
Right.
But the clerks won't even read that far. They say, no, you can't file anything at all.
You need a local journalist. Are these newspapers that you're putting advertising in, are any of the journalists even remotely interested in this topic?
No, I think everybody here wants to keep their heads in the sand. It's more comfortable.
Okay, until they get divorced.
If you're in North Dakota,
okay,
you better not have a voice. You better not have an opinion or a brain.
Uh-oh.
You need to be barefoot, pregnant, in the kitchen, cooking some lefse up, and that's it.
Oh, wait a minute. I think we missed a – I thought that's how they felt about everybody, but you're saying women are treated like, obviously, based on what you just said. That word got left out too. So these Blog Talk occasionally misses words. And so, or phones, you know, miss words. So if I don't fill in the gaps, you know, we don't know for sure. So this is the view of North Dakotans of women? Let's get that one
yes.
more time. That bad?
North
Wait a minute. What century are they living in up there?
They're very behind.
Okay.
They're,
sounds like it.
They're very no, women, if you have an intelligence, you know, higher than what the room temperature in Alaska, they don't like you. They just don't. And if you're a strong woman with any kind of a backbone and speak your mind, know your rights, they will just beat the snot right out of you. And that's where I've been. my ex was violating a court order for 53 months consecutive.
Uh-huh. Right.
I had not seen my little girl for that entire time.
Yeah.
And so I put together paperwork. I've become a freelance paralegal over the years since 2012, just self-taught on rights and, you know, all the codes and laws and procedures and all of that good crap. Right?
Mm-hmm. Well, you almost because if you're not going to get good legal representation or you can't afford it, you really have to become your own lawyer. You know, and these people say, well, anybody who has themselves for a lawyer has a fool for a client. Well, really? Then make a better system. Make it so legal, you know, good quality legal representation is accessible and actually works in a fair court system. You know, until you do that, yeah, you better well be your own advocate. So you know when you're being screwed over.
Well, I had attorneys through my divorce and post-divorce trial. Right. And I spent $100,000 there. And I lost absolutely everything. That goes back to the funding, the kickbacks, the incentives. The Clinton Foundation was behind it and started this number of years ago.
Oh, what's so that connection? How do they fit into this? Now, you know me, I like details. So
they put forth $150,000, and these are incentives given to judges. And between that and the Fathers' Rights Movement, which is crap. I'm not saying fathers don't have rights. I'm not saying that at all. The mm-hmm. movement itself is crap. It's even used against men because there isn't oversight. But however, regardless of how much abuse has been created and caused by a man, he's 87% more likely to get custody than the woman. Because this
Dude, that's
is how
a change. That's a huge change.
It's been this way for a really long time. It's just now it's coming more to light of why.
So when did that change, though? Because, you know, I remember, you know, my folks got divorced. I mean, it was almost guaranteed that, you know, my mom would get, you know, me. and they agreed to that anyway, just because, you know, of all kinds of circumstances I'm not going to go into. But the point was, you know, for a long time, you know, 60s, 70s, even probably through the 80s, women were almost guaranteed to get the kids, and along with the kids, the house and child support and everything else. And the guy basically was out and wages garnished, and it was pretty terrible. And so the father's rights movement, as I understand it, because I was a big men's rights, father's rights guy back in my 20s, for the simple reason that I didn't want, you know, if I ever had to get divorced, I wanted at least the protection. I want the equal protection, not special protection, but at least the equal protection of the laws that should something happen. You know, then I was stupid enough to actually get married, but that's another story. But father's rights in the ideal, you know, back, you know, Iron John and Robert Bly, the poet, and, you know, men's awakening and, you know, putting on makeup and, you know, face paint and not makeup, but face paint and, you know, drumming in the woods. And it was fun stuff. You know, we used to drum in San Francisco Golden Gate Park. 50 guys together, a bunch of big drums. Anyway, it was a good time. But the point of it that was equality. It was not a movement to do anything other than to get fair treatment in family court, as well as a bunch of other, just fair treatment for men in general. So that's where I come from. That's my perspective, and I still believe in that. Now, what happened to the father's rights movement to turn that into something else, and what did it turn into?
A total monster.
Okay.
It's a nightmare. They've flipped the whole script, and again, there's no oversight. So, like, my ex is a severe narcissist, and mm-hmm. I don't remember if it's overt or overt. He hides it well.
That's covert.
And,
trust me, I'm well versed on my narcissist. I grew up in a narcissist family. I've done the research, so, you know, read the stuff, read the psychological things he asked. I know too much about narcissists, quite frankly. Yeah, so that's usually what happens. You know, narcissists and empaths. For those that don't know, there's a doctor, Ross Rosenstein. He wrote a book called The Human Magnet Syndrome. So if you want to divide the world into two people, narcissists. I'm talking real narcissists, not the ones that look at themselves in the mirror and go, aren't I wonderful? That's not a real narcissist. A real narcissist gets pleasure from destroying your life. That is their sole purpose is to destroy your life. And the more they destroy your life, the more emotionally you become dependent on them, you know, the happier they are. That's what they call their supply. Okay. And so for those of us unfortunate enough to be born into a family where the parents are narcissists, you know, whose sole occupation is to destroy your spirit, destroy your life, destroy everything that you think good about yourself, and remove every possible opportunity for you to be happy whenever possible, except just enough to make you think that, you know, you're still okay and to keep you stringing along. That's where I started, you know, but I'm still able to do, but, you know, at least I had two parents. I had one that was bad and one that was absolutely a monster. And so the bad one at least allowed me to do things, you know, like play music and start flying lessons and things, which I did on my own, you know. But overall, you know, the mental abuse that no one has any clue what it's like to be constantly told you're an idiot, you're a moron, you'll never achieve anything. Don't even try to do this, 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 or this, and you can't do whatever you want to do because of this, 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 and this. All right? That's what a narcissist, that's a real narcissist. Things like gaslighting, real gaslighting, not just, you know, lying to you. We're talking about lying to you for the sole purpose of driving you insane, okay? So people have no idea the depths of what a narcissist does. Narcissists, according to the human magnet syndrome theory, end up with empaths. We're the good folks. We're the nice people. We're the ones that know when you're in pain. We're the ones that can tell what you're thinking without you thinking, without you saying anything. We're the ones that know when your life is totally going to crap and hopefully what to say to fix it. We're the ones that get, that unfortunately, grow up, you know, basing our self-worth on how much we can do for other people. And until we empaths get over that and realize that we need to do ourselves first and then help other people, you're always going to be a victim of other people taking advantage of you, you know, constantly making you prove your self-worth by doing things for them. That's how narcissists entrap empaths. How am I doing?
Perfect. Nailed it.
Okay, good. Yeah, I'm getting better at it. You know, it all makes sense. I'm putting the pieces together in my head. It's like, oh, that's how I grew up. This is why I am where I am. So Action Radio is a natural for an empath because I'm thinking, I can reach out with what everybody's, you know, all the things that are going on, turn it into an expression of law as opposed to, you know, sympathy. So I'm turning, you know, problems and emotional problems into concrete laws to cure that problem so that the answer is not sympathy but freedom. That's essentially what Action Radio is. Back
nice.
To you. Yeah.
Okay.
We have a lot of work to do.
Well,
go ahead.
When I came up here in December, and because I hadn't seen my daughter in 53 months, which was against the court order, I did do a motion for order to show cause for contempt. So I wasn't playing anymore because in the past I had sent a motion for change of venue and two other such to the clerk of court for filing because that's proper way of filing. And she had returned them to me in 2017 telling me that I could not file per standing order of Judge Reich. So when I came up here in December, walked into their office in person the 21st of December, I think her and the other clerk just about died seeing me walk in because I've been gone.
They're not used to people being empowered. You know, it's like once they give an order, that's it. You know, who are you to question? Besides being a woman, you know, you're an inferior. You're not one of us. You're not one of the legal profession. How dare you? This is why it's called the bar. It's the bar between us and them. That's the bar.
Well,
the bar between the legal profession and real people. Go ahead.
So I filed. I gave them my paperwork. Both clerks were there that day that I dealt with over the years. And I started my telephone recording, and I said, I need to file this. And right away, Sylvia Schell says, well, you can't file because standing order of Judge Reich. And I said, excuse me, ma'am, I have the right to file. I have full right to equal and full access to the court, same as anybody else. This is a right that cannot be trespassed upon, and you need to take my paperwork, and you need to file. And
who's this person? Like, their public official? What's their title? Just make sure we get to keep it all clear and straight here. She's clerk? Okay, go ahead.
And so...
clerk of courts, right?
I said, I am recording for my protection, and the other clerk had popped by then, and she's like, do you know that she's recording? And I'm like, yeah, I can record this. I said, I have to for my protection. So I kindly read off to her some laws that they're governed by, that if clerk does not file, she's in violation of Title 18, 2071, Title 18, 1001, all this stuff. And the fees and fines can be attached, the penalties, if they violate my rights. They took my papers, and I took a photo. I said, see, it's on your side of the desk. According to law, An instrument is deemed filed upon receipt, even if that instrument is not file stamped. And I left, not knowing if they were going to file or not.
Well, you have a picture of it on their side of the desk. You've got the picture of the document. You've got the recording. And now with these blank faces on their, blank looks on their faces, you walked out. Then what happened? This is getting exciting. Then what happened?
Well, I was kind of fuming under my hat by that time, but I kept it under my hat, and I made the drive to where I've been staying up here, a couple hours away, not an hour and a half away, and I started to work on some other papers. Well, I come to find out, through a friend who looked, I didn't have diddly for internet up here at the time, and they had filed my papers, in fact, that day.
Hmm. Interesting.
So that was cool. Like, yay, all right. Because my case was marked as closed. And they're like, well, your case is closed. I'm like, reopen it. It's really easy. Hit a button.
Yeah. Who closed it? Yeah, exactly. Why would you close a case that's still going on? Yeah.
I don't. They play games up here. And people
I don't think it's just up there, though. I don't think it's just, can't believe it's because I've heard cases from either North or South Carolina. I've heard cases from Illinois where Michael is and various people he's written about. He's an investigative reporter, an author on this kind of, he makes speeches all the time. Angel Law is out in California. I've heard California stories. You know, I mean, I hear stories from everywhere. Not only that, they're international too. I mean, this is not limited to this country.
You know, experience is here in North Dakota. You're right. It is everywhere. And it's because it's the fox guarding the hen house.
Yeah.
In every situation. And you start digging. Years ago, I did a Freedom of Information Act request to, like, the governor's office, to a social services office in one county, and that sort of thing. I sent out these FOIAs. And the attorney general, she said they're not bound by that. Everybody have come by in North Dakota, even though there's a North Dakota century code, like 4410-11, something or another. And they say that they don't have to give us this information. Yet when you look online, they do have what's called the Sunshine Law here.
Okay, we got that in Florida too. Yeah.
Okay, and they want to abide by it. I've had them tell me, the Attorney General's office, his spokeswoman, tell me, well, to leave their office one time, but on the phone, that they're not bound by federal law. That has nothing to do with them. They're not federal.
That's kind of funny. Well, no, sunshine laws are state laws, though. To a point, that's true. I mean, there are separate jurisdictions between federal and state. The federal government tries to rule on everything. You know, the fact that there's a federal Department of Education is kind of irrational because there's nothing in the Constitution that gives the government any role, the federal government, any role in education at all. So the fact that department is actually outside the Constitution. So in that regard, education is a state and local matter. So if they said, yes, the federal government can't rule on education, they're right, even though there are rules and laws that the Department of Ed puts out and various other things, titles, all that kind of stuff. You know, so that's a whole different thing. I guess they do it under the Commerce Clause or necessary and proper, whatever, justification they have. So there are separations. The whole point of a separation of powers is the federal government has certain responsibilities and the states and the local governments have other responsibilities. Keeping them separate is a check and balance on each other's power. You don't want the federal government ruling over everything, or you have a national government, where the national government rules, and then the states are under that, and then the cities are under that, and, the unincorporated areas are under that, so it's not top down, it's side to side. However, having said that, maybe this case is completely different because the federal government does have some role, especially the judiciary, in keeping, the proper legal procedures going. Or ruling something an unconstitutional action, if it's a violation of your rights. If it's a violation of your rights, federal government absolutely has a role in it. Otherwise, we'd still have segregation. If the federal government couldn't touch, illegal state laws like segregation, we'd still have segregation maybe. So, there are ways to do it. But I don't want the federal government to have too much or anything beyond their authority, where they're actually making policy and the courts are making policies and solutions, because they can't do that. So jurisdiction gets really critical to understand. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, and I've been hearing that even this trip up here, that when I went to the clerk, and lately I went last week, and I wanted to do a couple things while I was there. One was get my entire file on an external drive, so I had everything. I had gone through, had a house fire last April, and so I lost my files.
True.
Yeah. So, well, North Dakota's too backwards, so they can't do that. They cannot put it on an external drive. I think what they're afraid of is if they goof up and put somebody else's information on there or tattle on themselves, you know, that kind of thing.
But there's still court records. There's still stenographer records or whatever those people are that punch those little, you know, 16 key pad weird things that make transcripts. They still have those, don't you?
Yeah, but they're not able to put your file on. They can only, you can purchase it per page, or
well,
you.
God.
Yeah, I have 14 file cabinet drawers is my file. You know, the
14 what?
File cabinet. File.
Oh, 14 file drawers. Oh my goodness. Okay. Wow. Yeah.
Yep, that's my thousand docket entries. Actually, it's over 1,000 now.
This is for one divorce.
Uh huh.
So we only have about 13 minutes left. Have you seen your daughter? I mean, is that part resolved or is that still going on?
So, yeah, I had a friend help me with a notice of liability, and I kind of warned the visitation center. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden they started accepting my emails instead of blocking me. And I did get to see her. Yeah.
Okay.
I've been calling there. They won't call me back. This has been going on for years.
Yeah.
And,
well, fighting works. You're proving that fighting works. And the people that accept,
I don't know.
You know, it's what a price you had to pay.
Yes, it's been an emotional hell.
Yeah.
So I have seen her twice in February. Two one-hour visits was the protocol for starting out. My ex had filed an ex parte interim order.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. September 2nd of 2015, telling the judge he wanted me to have 1 2-hour visit per month supervised. So the judge said, okay.
So that's stupid. Based on what? Based on, you know, well, like I say, based on what? What possible reason could they limit you? Do you have a history of violence? Do you have convictions? Did you steal cars? Did you commit major felonies? You know, did you engage in,
nope,
you know, embezzlement, extortion, you know, crime, gang warfare? I mean, did you child abuse, anything? Is there anything we can point to here that shows that you're an unfit person and can only
nope
get 2 hours of supervised? Okay, that's the question.
That's what he put in for, and he's always gotten exactly what he asks for.
Now, why is he able to do that? Why? What makes him so powerful that he can get what he wants? I don't want his name in this. What's that now?
His attorney is Satan himself.
Oh.
I know it's his attorney because he's not that bright.
wow.
And this attorney must own this judge somehow.
Okay.
Because everything they put in for, they get 100%. I can't even get a hearing. I can't even get the judge to look at my papers. I did a motion for request for clarification of an order, and the order on that came back denied.
And your attorneys have been able to do what?
Nothing. That's why I'm on my own again. I've actually, I haven't won. She's not home with me just yet, but I haven't given up. I will file with the federal court. I will file with the 8th District Court of Appeals. I will do whatever it takes, but I am exposing these judges. I have, you know, Facebook pages. I have a Twitter page. I'm working on a website again. I didn't realize it was down.
Hey, mine's down too. What a coincidence. mine's different reasons. Yeah. One of these are coincidences after a while. It's like, wait a minute. And then once again, let's invite the FBI, KGB. If you guys, you know, are listening like you usually are, then you want to call the show, feel free, be like everybody else, and just dial the number. Oh, God. I do that once in a while. It amuses me. But, yeah. Again,
yeah.
So, but this is the pattern too, is that the most corrupt, most obnoxious, the biggest narcissist usually has the most money, the most family backing, and the best lawyer, or at least the lawyer that owns the judge. The mm-hmm. empath, that would be you in this situation, usually has the worst legal representation. The you know, you can't afford, you know, the really high priced folks that fly in their own biz jet, you know, and the judge completely ignores you and tries to call you crazy and doubts your mental sanity and, you know, puts your kids under various guardianships, and they want you to take all kinds of psychological exams, and of course the person who needs it, the narcissist, is judged to be sane automatically. You know, did they put you through the psych thing? Did you have that routine or no?
Oh, yes. So because okay. he was screaming alienation
right.
when she was little, and I mean she was 3, and he was screaming alienation. Yeah,
oh,
she was barely
right.
3. He's screaming alienation. But he was intentionally skipping his visits. See, I had
oh.
tested, and he had supervised visits.
Right, and he was skipping them?
He was not showing up for them, yes. He told the supervisor that he was going to skip this visit, skip the visit was his word.
Because?
No reason. And
is it, would that be, what do they call that? If parents, you know, was it child negligence? I mean, there's a term for that.
Well, I was the one with custody, and he just didn't show up for his visits time and again. But when we went back to court in April of 2012, his attorney that man's got a special place in hell, that's for sure. He would twist everything, and he said, so Miss Hansen, did Mr. Dieterle see his daughter on, you know, March 2nd? You know, and I'm like, no. See, Your Honor, manipulation, alienation. She's alienating the child from him.
No, he didn't
and
show
I said,
up.
No, he didn't show up. And the judge
yeah.
says, you're not allowed to speak.
You're not allowed to speak. See, that's the answer. You're not allowed to speak. Yeah, okay. So for those that want to know what this alienation thing is all about, okay, this is a strange phenomenon. This is like father's rights. It's another one of these totally twisted, manipulated things, because there are parents that talk badly about their ex, and I don't necessarily want to mention your ex's name unless they are a public figure too. So we can just call them, you know, the whatever, the monster, you know. But the idea of alienation, that somehow one parent is turning the kid against the other parent in some kind of criminal fashion. You know, all parents slip. I even slip myself. You know, once in a great while I would say something maybe not as flattering as possible about my ex. I tried to avoid it at all costs, but we're human. Okay, we all make mistakes. But you know, you say, well, I'm sorry I said that. That's not, you know, just, okay, fine. But the problem is when it comes to how this became somehow a criminal thing, that you could be charged with of somehow willfully, you know, perpetrating a psychological operation on your kid, you know, to you know, alienate them from the other parent. I'm not sure, you know, and then what is being used though is that the other parent is saying that they were the ones alienated, when they're the ones actually doing it. And the strangest part about this is that the one who claims alienation is usually the narcissist, the one that wants and demands custody, and they don't even want it. They don't even like the kids. They don't want the kids. They don't want
right.
to spend any time with them. They don't teach them anything. They don't, you know, I spent more time. I was a weekend dad for several years with my kid. And we had more fun and more adventures and traveled to more places and, you know, did more activities and horseback rode on the beach and, you know, did touristy stuff. And we had a great time, you know. I only had the weekends. We managed to cram more in the weekends than any other time. But so, you know, so you can't – I never talked about, you know, I never tried to stop my ex from doing anything with my kid. Unfortunately, my ex never tried to stop me from doing anything with my kid either. And so in that respect, she was
hey,
really good.
Hey,
Greg. Yes, Jesse, go ahead.
Greg, can I say something?
Yeah, please do.
As a mom, I'm listening to this lady. As a mom, must be horrible, but the real monsters are the judges, and they've been getting away for years and years to
mm-hmm.
take the right of moms or dads to
yep.
be with their kids, and they're playing God, and it's been going too far, and it
mm-hmm.
is time to stop all these criminals, because all these judges are criminals. They should be locked
cool.
up.
Well, I'm trying to think of the best way to do that. I think you're absolutely right. And I'll get Angie's response in just a second here, because her story, I've heard Angie, I could have, you know, almost done the story, you know, for you. I've heard it. It's so common. It's so scary. Mm-hmm. And so dangerous.
So many times.
I wanted your voice on it just because it's your story, Angie. But the point is, you know, I'm thinking, you know, since Angie, you're on the web, maybe we should do like a judge watch, you know, start rating judges. You know, these are the most evil, disgusting.
Right,
you know,
them.
Yeah, exactly.
The roving.
And we might even turn into you know, some kind of a website or regular report on the show, especially as we get our first million listeners. This might be something to do, plus the legislation.
Yeah.
You know, so there's ways to do it. Angie, why don't you go ahead, and then Josie, you guys chat a bit. We only have a few minutes
left. There's the roving room.
What's that?
And it's where you can rate judges. However, uh-huh. I looked up North Dakota. They only had a few listed, so I did email them asking how I can get another judge listed, and I haven't yet gotten a response. But there is one called the Roving Room. I know some people use Yelp to tattle on a bad attorney. We need to know what our rights are so that we can push forth and say, hey, you can't trespass upon this. Just like I had that lawfully served via sheriff's service a claim complaint the summons against him, and he barred from filing. Then that was on April 6th. Then on April 12th, he issued another order just chewing me out that I can't file this and that and the other. And it's like, you cannot play judge and jury when I brought a case against you, dude.
Jury trials would be the first thing that would be my first improvement to family court, is make them jury trials.
Trial by jury.
Yeah.
There's a difference. We want a trial by jury in family court. Yes. Let's put that bill together. Let's go.
Well, let's put a parental rights bill together.
I got a
question. Let's actually list a few. Yeah, go ahead, Jesse. We got about 3 minutes left.
I got a question. Jesse? Can you divorce your monster judge if you want to? Would they let you divorce him? You mean letting him go and get a new one?
I have asked for his recusal, and actually Federal Code 28 U.S.C. 455 says that once you bring a motion of such forward, that dismissal is mandatory. Disqualification or recusal is mandatory and not discretionary. And still, he won't get off.
Well, can you have him arrested then? Can't you have him arrested for would that be a federal marshal thing, or would that be a county sheriff, or who would haul his ass into jail?
Well, is one who does such things with federal violations.
Justice Department?
You know, no, the federal marshal, the state federal marshal.
Okay.
U.S. Marshal.
U.S. Marshals, okay.
Yep, the state U.S. Marshal. So the North Dakota U.S. Marshal has received two of my judicial complaints showing his violations of federal law. And if federal law and state law conflict, federal law always overrides.
As long as the federal government has jurisdiction, that's not entirely true, but I'm not going to get into the details right now.
Mm.
You're essentially correct.
Mm-hmm.
As long as the federal government has jurisdiction in that area, that's the caveat. Go ahead.
Well, with the Supremacy Clause and the Doctrine of Preemption, when a state law conflicts with federal law, then the answer comes from the Doctrine of Federal Preemption.
Article which one?
Article 6, I believe that is, of the Constitution, that the federal law is the supreme law of the land.
Nope.
That judges and everything.
I don't disagree with you.
Unfortunately,
we only have a minute left.
Okay.
Yeah, go ahead.
State courts have a concurrent duty to enforce federal law. They cannot deny a federal right.
Oh, no. No. The Constitution is the supreme law of the land. The Constitution includes the Bill of Rights. The 14th Amendment makes the Bill of Rights apply to the states and the local governments as well, all governments throughout the United States. Okay, so that's how that works. The supremacy of federal law is supreme where the federal government has jurisdiction. Where they don't have jurisdiction, the 10th Amendment reserves those to the states and the people. Okay, so that's
right.
We'll talk about this another time, but because it deserves more discussion. But you're essentially right as long as the federal government has jurisdiction. Now, if the federal government is enforcing civil rights and the state is violating civil rights, your right to a judicial proceeding, then the federal government absolutely has supremacy in that case. Got to go 30 seconds. And thanks for coming on the show. We're going to talk more. Yeah. Go ahead, Angie.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate the time today, and I'm definitely willing to come back at any time.
Okay.
There's lots we can share and talk about. So,
yeah, Article 6 for one thing. I got to look up the Supremacy Clause. Maybe I'll talk about that tomorrow, or we'll talk off the air. But, yeah, we're off the air for now. Josie, thanks for calling, too, for Pianki that called earlier, and Shelby as well, and Rick in the first hour. And Angie, thank you so much. Again, go look at the case. Want to hear more details to where it's going to go. We just have to do another time because we're done. Thank you. Greg Penglis here for Action Radio at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction and our website, writeyourlaws.com. My sole preoccupation today is getting writeyourlaws.com back, you know, and I'll see you tomorrow morning at 6. Angie, you take care.
Thanks. You too.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.